Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, happy Sunday. This is Seeds of Change, and I'm your host, Danielle St. John. Wow, what a week. There's so much to talk about. I definitely want to cover the two Tucker Carlson clips. He's back on Twitter. And of course, you know, what happens right after he does his, you know, exercises his right to free speech? Well, Fox sues him. So this is clearly not about, you know, something that he said on Fox. It's about keeping him quiet everywhere. So I definitely want to talk about that, talk about the Trump indictments, another load of crap. Mom's going to cover that in the good news report. And you know, what else has been going on? A little bit about the fires in Canada. Been seeing a lot of pictures coming out about, you know, of the eastern seaboard basically just being under this weird orange haze. And let's see, I know I'm missing something. But just waiting really for Elizabeth to jump on and Mom so she can give us a little little teaser of what she's going to be talking about in the good news report today. So with that, while I wait for people to jump on, I may start with this. Oh, there's Elizabeth. Let's see. I may start with the push one. Please, there we go. See. Hello.
Hello, baby. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm going to rise to the occasion to become a superstar on the radio. It's been
okay.
A horrible, horrible day and night. But
oh.
I made popcorn for this show.
Oh, nice.
Because this is interesting. I woke up. It was horrible. I couldn't breathe. You know, I told you about my problem that perhaps it's who knows what it is, but it goes away and I can go to sleep after hours of hell. So I wake up at 3:00 in the afternoon and I'm like, oh my God, I slept this long. Thank God. Cause I thought I was going to have a stroke from no sleep and whatever with this lung issue. And who's talking to me on the radio? William Barr. William Barr is telling me that our evil President Trump has stolen war plans. He actually told you what was in these classified documents. And I was like, oh my God, is this not just ridiculous propaganda? You got to know. This is like Nixon. Nixon, who didn't say alleged. Remember that? He was a lawyer, Nixon. And he like blew a case by talking about it in the press years and years ago. Well, this was deliberate. Mind control drops. Here's a little bit of crumbs for you. How evil he is. Because the next breath, and this is regular news on the radio. They said that this is the popular poll. And I thought, how did that get out? Because we're supposed to be controlled by propaganda. But the general consensus of the nation is that this is more of a political witch hunt and has nothing to do with justice. And that gave
same
sentence. And that's what I woke up to. And I'm like, oh, is this not interesting? This is interesting political times. Even though I don't, you know, it's like football to me. I'll watch it during the season because it's interesting. And this is fucking interesting. So I made popcorn, babe. So what are we going to do today?
Well, that's actually what Mom's going to talk about in her good news report is
cool.
A little bit of that. And then not only about what's going on with Trump, but what is going on, what happened with former presidents in the same situation, you know, and basically when their libraries were built and how they, you know, how long before they left office were their secured facilities, even if like the library wasn't completely built, like we know Obama's wasn't finished right away. The FBI still had a plan for a secured facility. Now Trump didn't like that. You know, he's the only one who wasn't allowed a plan, and so the FBI went down and inspected the place where the
Technically, he's still president. You know that because this was a coup d'état. You know, this is an ongoing saga of banana republic. It really, really is, and you know, it's just ridiculous that the very same crime, well, if you're going to say crimes and misdemeanors, are being laid at the feet of Biden, the sitting president, supposedly. And then on top of it, layer upon layer of corruption with interference with public and political figures in another country that we happen to be, you know, funding a war for. All this is coming out on Biden, but, you know, the Babylon Bee did a great little, what is it? A one-act play of comedy of the FBI finding nothing in his safe, making much to do about nothing. And that's pretty much what we got going. And the public is seeing this for what it is. Here, you're going after this man for one thing, but we have just oceans of corruption for the past three presidents.
Right.
Bush the dumber. Clinton Foundation, they became mega rock stars and multi-billionaires with all of their ties. And that was the time when people should have spoke up because they were the most ostentatious egomaniacs that made money off of the former presidency. No other president.
Well, no reasonable prosecutor would have gone after them, Elizabeth. I said no reasonable prosecutor would have gone after them, Elizabeth.
Well, no, I'm saying as far as the land of ethics, what's ethical? They made so much money off of piggybacking off of being a president. And
yeah,
paid
my mom's with us, by the way.
The corruption and the ties, and it's kind of like, everyone should have questioned the political arena at that time. And now they want to go to, you know, they let that slide. And then, you know, all the scandals of Obama and his attorney general and the pay-for-play and the guns and what was it? It's like you actually weren't doing your job. Matter of fact, you're doing the opposite of what your job was. Your job is to protect the country, and you were destroying it and selling it out and making it more dangerous, and no one prosecuted you. And now you're going after
us, by the way.
Someone.
Hi.
Oh, hey, Carla, how are you? How are you?
Doing good. It's so cool, Elizabeth, because the stuff that you're talking about is exactly
good.
The problem is the unequal application of the law, isn't it? It's not necessarily it's not necessarily whether Trump did or didn't. It's the fact that why should they, when they have treated other people doing the exact same thing, worse, as far as I'm concerned, and I'll prove that today.
I remember Cheney and Bush. They actually were put under a closed session. That was the closest they got to a trial because they were caught doing war crimes. But, we can't, you know, we talked to them, and it's okay. That's how they handled that. But this has got to be so public, and it's pathetic. It really is. When people are seeing it, she's pathetic. It's almost, I was like so smiling. I'm like, this is amazing because, you know, they would have skewed the story to where, you know, yesterday Biden's scores were fantastic. Mm-hmm. He even got the endorsement of the unions in Pennsylvania. And I'm like, can he walk? Is he even awake? And he's going out, you know, he's going to run for another and he's got the union back. And I'm like, this is ridiculous.
That's
what our news is. It's propaganda. It's out there to make you feel good and fuzzy, and everything's okay. Don't look out the window because, you know, we can't breathe from all the smoke of, you know, what is this about? This is, I think we're like, we are definitely like in the slew of a fucking war right now. We're being assaulted from all sides, and it's quite frightening.
And then I just read an article that they're bringing back masks and mask mandates for unvaccinated people in the White House.
Do not see what it's fear, it's incompetence and evil. The demons are just, you know, it's like the Wicked Witch of the West when they poured the bucket of water on her. Amazing! That's what's happening. They are so just wanting to have control, and it's like, I'm sorry, we're not. No, you can keep trying to do this, but it's yeah. But it's. I didn't see that, but with all of the smoke, because I actually, I'm like, oh my god, I made my dogs go out yesterday. They didn't. I could have had a nice lazy indoor day, but it was, the sun's been out a lot, and I'm like, I should get some sun on this body because I'm on vacation, and
I don't even know what the sun is anymore.
Well, it's nice. It's irritating to me because I'm not in it enough. And I'm like, oh, this is the sun. I'm like, honey, you look like you're dead. Let's put some sun on the skin. You'll feel better. I used to go on the roof in April with rum and get a tan in the cloudy days. That's what a sunbather I was when I was younger. Now I'm just like, So anyways, I'm like, and today it's raining. And I'm like, we're going to have weeks of no sun. So I'm like, come on, guys, let's go in the backyard. But there was this weird haze, and you know that, you know, the smoke has actually bothered me. It's been pretty bad, so I've been staying inside. I was surprised it made it to the news because I'm thinking they're going to let this go and ignore it and focus upon, an uptick of corona, you know, because the air quality is so bad. And forget that it's allergy season and people are dying on top of it and create a new health crisis. That's what I thought they were going to do. So I'm actually feeling the effects of being a fool and being out in this shit, breathing it. I'm not doing too well. I have to go back to I'm putting water with oregano on my stove so I can have some moisture in the air because I don't have a dehumidifier or whatever, the vaporizer. My oils are actually, I think, drying my lungs out. I had to stop with my oils yesterday and do a sauna in my bathroom last night so I could breathe. And it was just like, it's like being in hell. And I'm like, oh, my God. And then I'm like, okay, we're throwing all the cigarettes got thrown out last night. I'm like, we're not smoking anymore. Let's work with what we're doing here. Yeah, I know. but on top of that, you know, it's kind of like these are things that happen, and some people have harder times with respiratory. But when you've got did you see the pictures of New York where it looks, they had pictures of, I believe it was the Gulf War or Iraq, and the type of chemicals they used, that's the same hue. And the air quality was just hideous. And so it's almost
let me just tell a little story about that, because people keep trying to say that this is all from the wildfires. And I can tell you that. Yeah, exactly. That as somebody who now that this could have been replaced, by now. But in 2007, we ran from wildfires in the city that I lived in Rancho Bernardo. This was such a massive fire. And because of the Santa Ana winds, meaning winds coming from the east instead of from the west, this fire was able to jump a 16-lane freeway. Cement freeway with ease. This was in 2007, the biggest movement, peacetime movement of people since the Civil War. And I'm telling you that even in the thick of it, even in right in the middle of, you know, being able to see actual flames, you know, we didn't even get it that bad. It wasn't even that color then. So I call bullshit on this just being smoke from a fire.
Yeah.
So we just had 3,000 pounds of 300,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate go missing a few weeks ago, and then we have this.
Yeah.
And that was so covered up. I'm glad it's coming out. I'm glad it's coming out because somebody else, did you see the clip? I think it was a Twitter clip where they took pictures of the war after effects of using the same chemicals in the Middle East when we were there and what New York looks like. And it's the same exact hue, which is not normal. And with that being said, yes, everyone should, you know, it's like, please do stay in. This is unhealthy. And that's what the government's supposed to do. But to decide, you know, you're going to be fired if you come out, go outside and play, you know, or you got to go to the store again. No, this is where it's kind of like common sense dictates. It's like, okay, this is dangerous. They put the warning out. They leave it up to you. That's how it actually should be. But the fact that I'm and you know, on the news, they were saying, even here, they're for the last week, they've been talking about the fires. And I'm like, thank God. Because a few years back, this happened. I couldn't breathe. I'm like, what is this? What is going on? Oh, there's wildfires. And I'm like, am I the only one that's being affected by this crap? Apparently so. So nothing was said about it. But now it's a topic, and they're saying that, you know, masks don't work. Because I think they're acknowledging the fact that everybody thinks that masks are magic. So just put them on. They're like, no, masks don't work. Maybe you should stay inside with the air conditioning. They're really talking about that. I'm like, okay, that's good. That's good. And still you see these idiots with the mask. And it's like, oh, God, it's virtual signal, stupid land of crazy people. But I guess, I don't know. Can you ever fix it? I don't think we can. It's like the litmus test of what percentage of the population is just crazy. Crazy and unhinged.
I went into a store the other day, and as I was walking in, a man in a mask was walking out. And I said to him, and I've been doing this to a lot of people that I see wearing masks. I say, masks don't work, and I give him a thumbs up. I'm not saying, hey, retard, you know, take off your stupid mask, you stupid. You know what I mean? I'm not being rude. I'm just, masks don't work. So I'm walking into the store, the guy's walking out. I say, masks don't work. And he goes, and he's a bigger, like, he's big. Like, you know, I'd say like 6'3", 6'4", right? Big dude. And he goes, what did you say? And I know he heard me. I know he heard me, but he was being confrontational. So I turn around and I say, masks don't work. And I give him a thumbs up. And he goes, go fuck yourself.
Well, see, that's the element of society that you need to stay away from. My mom used to tell me, because I was quite aggressive and stupid and I was a little asshole. And I would do things like that because you just don't do – you will tend to get, like, punched, you know. You poke the bear. Don't tease crazy people. Don't look at them. Don't talk at them and don't point at them. They're crazy. They're unhinged. They will come in and get you. And it's almost like he was looking – you know, there is that – there's that element of dangerous asshole out there that – what if he had a gun? I often think, you know, I don't flip people off or scream at people in traffic at all anymore, and I don't have the need because I've kind of like
– but what you're saying, Elizabeth, is aggressive. You don't flip people off. I was not being aggressive. All I said was masks don't work, and I gave him a thumbs up.
Yeah.
That was not aggressive.
But he got aggressive. You know,
yes.
So it's almost like it's almost like you need to almost like kind of mind your P's and Q's and mind your own business, because you never know when someone's going to like shoot you from the next car. And I'm like, wow, you really need to exercise good manners in the society, because there's that element. There's they're ready to snap. And I see what
disturbs me. So I have to have good
me.
Manners, if they don't?
Yeah, because it's a question of survival. Yeah, I see.
Yeah, okay.
So I found the article about the ammonium nitrate, if anybody wants me to just give it a quick read.
Yeah, anyway.
Okay.
That'd be great.
It says 30 tons chemicals lost during rail shipment. The chemical ammonium nitrate is relatively harmless by itself, but has caused deadly explosions in industrial accidents and has been used in targeted attacks. About 60,000 pounds of ammonium nitrate, a chemical used as a fertilizer and in explosives, went missing on a rail shipment from Wyoming to California in April and has still not been found, officials said. Dyno Nobel, an explosive manufacturing company, notified the federal government of the loss and said in a statement that it was investigating what happened during the nearly two-week journey. The company said the rail car with the material was sealed when it left the manufacturing site in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and the seals were still intact when it arrived in Saltdale, California. The initial assessment is that a leak through the bottom gate on the rail car may have developed in transit, the statement said. A report made on May 10th to the National Response Center, a federal emergency call center for railroad accidents, said that the rail car left Wyoming on April 12th and arrived in California empty. Dino Noble said the rail car was transported back to Wyoming for further investigation and that it had limited control of the train's activity while the cargo was being transported. The company said it does not suspect any criminal or malicious activity. So just ammonia nitrate is certainly a well-known disaster risk, said Fred Miller, an independent chemical disaster expert. Okay. So just thought I would let you know that was a story from, what's the date on the story? Well, I don't think it'd be the date. May 21st.
That's
so just a few weeks ago.
Cheyenne is the big hub of the military industrial complex. Cheyenne Mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all, that's so suspicious, so suspect. And two, you know, out there right now, they have the most atrocious weather patterns. And they're not even weather patterns. They're like, talk about entities, demonic entities in the clouds acting like tornadoes. The cloud formation that
what's
are out
called?
There right now, weaponized warfare. And they're just like showing off their muscles right there out in their front yard. And it's the people that live out there are like, we've never seen this before, and they're posting pictures, and it's in, outside of Glendale and Cheyenne and that area there, and I'm like, oh my God, that's hideous, and it is destructive, and it's like, here, we can bring this over to you too. We can have these horrible, almost like Poseidon, you know, like rises up from the deep and boom, or it's a Godzilla movie. They are creating drastic, horrible storms out of the clouds, and they do not look normal. They look like a horror movie thing. And you know, and you see this, and you know what they're capable of, and their patents, and they've already, and it's right there outside of this huge weaponized mountain. Cheyenne Mountain is a military complex, and it's like, oh my gosh,
that's the spot.
Too much.
Danielle, I just sort of shop talk. You did get the message that I sent you in Seeds of Change, right?
No.
Oh.
Let me see. The James Comey and Hillary Clinton remix?
Yes, that's going to be my intro, just saying. It's
okay.
YouTube, so you should not have any problem with it at all, right?
Yeah, I got to download it. Okay, yeah, hold on.
Okay, so lots to talk about.
I already have it actually downloaded.
Yeah.
Of course you do. Because it's funny and it's so relevant right now. I'm going to just go check quickly to see how many Twitter views Tucker got on his first two episodes.
And that's also debatable. I have trolls come in all the time saying, well, that's not views. You know, that could just be somebody, you know, it shows up in their Twitter feed and they think it's garbage and they scroll past it and that counts.
No. Okay. No. No. So, that's not how that works. They're impressions. That means that people went to that page. Okay? That's what happened. Okay? People went to that page, and that's how they got all those impressions. And so they can say that all they want. They only would hope to be able to get as many impressions as Tucker Carlson got.
Right.
So
you know, that's the spoiled grapes mentality. There's so many people,
yes.
And you can't even give them the rod and the badge of your controlled opposition. They're just a miserable, whiny little pathetic person.
B-I-T-C-H, yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So the first one got 114.1 million impressions, 904,900 likes. So you might as well say a million. The second one didn't get as many. And I'm sure you will hear about that because there's a bunch of whiny little jealous bitches. 53.3 million impressions.
Mm-hmm.
493,900 likes. Okay.
Because he was talking about pedophilia in the second one.
Yeah, that would cling to your taboos. I would love to it's a pretty short clip, Elizabeth.
Yeah, I'm going to play him. I can't play him on the computer, but I can play him into the microphone.
I thought you would, because I was going to go and look at it because I didn't see it. And I saw a little bit of his stuff before he did this. He was talking on other people's shows, and I just thought, it's not as captivating without his script writers. I like him, but I thought, he needs his whole, it's kind of like when the Beatles broke up. They never were the same. And I thought that's kind of how it's going to be. So I didn't watch it, but I thought, you know what? With all the hoopla, and it's always hoopla, I'm like, we need to, and I thought, it's 10 minutes. Danielle will play it for us. So I'm looking forward to hearing it. We should play both of them, Andrew.
Well, I'm ready to do that now, if we could.
Yeah, me too. I can, pull it up now. But cool. The reason I say the thing about the second one not getting as many views is because there is still an algorithm to suppress things that expose pedophilia. You know, and
of course
so that's,
oh, of course.
That's what's going on. That's the only reason, in my opinion, that he didn't get as many views.
Well, his next one is going to be interviewing Donald Trump.
Nice.
So we'll see.
Oh, lovely. Mm-hmm.
So we might just break the frickin' internet on Tuesday.
Yeah.
I think that'll be good.
And of course, Fox News is already suing him.
Yeah, yeah. He doesn't care. He's doing it anyway. So is it the day that the suit? They started complaining the day after he put out the one about taboos. Excuse the language. The Epstein's trending on Twitter today. I don't know why.
Ah, interesting.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm ready if you guys are.
Go.
Yep.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
Okay.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. This morning, it looks like somebody blew up the Kakhovka Dam in southern Ukraine.
That's the first one, honey.
Russian war wiped out entire villages.
I know. I thought you wanted the first one.
Okay, it's fine.
We can do the second one. We can start with the second one. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Why are you playing both? Let's play the first one and then the second
one. We'd want to make sure you had the complete obedience of everybody
stop.
Inside your
board. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't know you were going to play both of them. You probably said that.
Yeah.
But,
Okay, hold on.
So
let me
I apologize. My head was in the clouds.
That's
sorry.
Okay. All right. We'll start over. 3, 2, 1.
Go.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. This morning, it looks like somebody blew up the Kakhovka Dam in southern Ukraine. The rushing wall of water wiped out entire villages, destroyed a critical hydropower plant, and as of tonight, puts the largest nuclear reactor in Europe in danger of melting down. So if this was intentional, it was not a military tactic. It was an act of terrorism. The question is, who did it? Well, let's see. The Kakhovka Dam was effectively Russian. It was built by the Russian government. It currently sits in Russian-controlled territory. The dam's reservoir supplies water to Crimea, which has been, for the last 240 years, home of the Russian Black Sea Fleet. Blowing up the dam may be bad for Ukraine, but it hurts Russia more. And for precisely that reason, the Ukrainian government has considered destroying it. In December, the Washington Post quoted a Ukrainian general saying his men had fired American-made rockets at the dam's floodgate as a test strike. So really, once the facts start coming in, it becomes much less of a mystery what might have happened to the dam. Any fair person would conclude that the Ukrainians probably blew it up, just as you would assume they blew up Nord Stream, the Russian natural gas pipeline, last fall. And in fact, the Ukrainians did do that, as we now know. It's not like Vladimir Putin is anxious to wage war on himself. Oh, but that's where you're wrong, Mr. and Mrs. Cable News consumer. Vladimir Putin is exactly that sort of man, the sort of man who'd shoot himself to death in order to annoy you. We know this from the American media, which wasted no time this morning in accusing the Russians of sabotaging their own infrastructure. Bill Kristol, the man who once told us that Saddam Hussein was responsible for 9/11, immediately denounced Putin as a war criminal and even more savagely compared him to Donald Trump. The rest of the pundit class made similar, clearly coordinated noises. Putin did it! Putin did it! And their reasoning was simple. Putin is evil, and evil people do evil things purely for the dark joy of being evil. In this specific case, Putin attacked himself, which is the most evil thing you can do, and therefore perfectly in character for a man that evil. That was their explanation. No one who's paid to cover these things seemed to entertain even the possibility it could have been Ukrainians who did it. No chance of that. Ukraine, as you may have heard, is led by a man called Zelensky. We can say for a dead certain fact that he was not involved. He couldn't have been. Zelensky is too decent for terrorism. Now, you see him on television, that's true, you might form a different impression. Sweaty and rat-like, a comedian turned oligarch, a persecutor of Christians, a friend of BlackRock. But don't believe your own eyes. Actually, Mr. Zelensky is a very good man. The best, really. As George W. Bush once noted, he is our generation's Winston Churchill. Of all the people in the world, our shifty, dead-eyed Ukrainian friend in the tracksuit is uniquely incapable of blowing up a dam. He's literally a living saint, a man in whom there is no sin. That's why Lindsey Graham is so attracted to him. They're just two good people hanging out together and being good. And like all good people, in person, they spend a lot of time talking about killing people and laughing like friends do. Here's the pair last one.
Free or die.
Now you are free.
Yes.
And we will be.
And the Russians are dying. It's the best money we've ever spent.
Lord God.
The Russians are dying. It's the best money we've ever spent, Graham says. A smile spreads across his thin, quivering lips as he forms the words. He looks like a starving man contemplating a breakfast buffet. The aroma of death has aroused Lindsey Graham. Thanks so much, replies Zelensky. He feels the same way. See, there's nothing dark here. Just two middle-aged guys celebrating the killing of a population. They don't seem like the kind of people who'd enjoy flooding villages or starting a famine. And in any case, who cares if they are? It's really not your business. Your job is to support Ukraine. Watch Nikki Haley, a Republican candidate for president, explain this principle on CNN.
A win for Ukraine is a win for all of us. And for them to sit there and say that this is a territorial dispute, that's just not the case. To say that we should stay neutral, it is in the best interest of America. It's in the best interest of our national security for Ukraine to win. We have to see this through. We have to finish it.
See? It's very easy to understand. It is vitally important for you to support Ukraine because it's necessary for Ukraine to be supported by you. Your support is mandatory until it's finished, whatever it is, and whatever that means. So shut up and support Ukraine or else you're in trouble. Back when they still taught logic, statements like this were known as tautologies. Something is true because it is. The more you repeat it, the truer it becomes. It's a self-reinforcing reality. There was a time when tautologies were considered illegitimate arguments, not to mention hilariously stupid. Only dumb people talk like that. Now everybody in power talks like that. Diversity is our strength. Trans women are women. Zelensky is Churchill. It's all self-evidently true. Doesn't need an explanation and don't ask questions. Sound familiar? Of course it does. That's the pap they're serving us day after day in steaming, lumpy portions. By this point, it's possible that American citizens are the least informed people in the world. Your average yak herder in Tajikistan knows who blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. It's obvious. Does he think some skinny dude in a dress is actually a girl? Come on. That idea would never occur to him. You've got to be lied to at full volume over a period of years in order to reach conclusions like that. And of course, we have been. The media lie. They do. But mostly they just ignore the stories that matter. What's happened to the hundreds of billions of U.S. dollars we've sent to Ukraine? No clue. Who organized those BLM riots 3 years ago? No one's gotten to the bottom of that. What exactly happened on 9/11? Well, it's still classified. How did Jeffrey Epstein make all that money? How did he die? How about JFK? And so endlessly on. Not only are the media not interested in any of this, they are actively hostile to anybody who is. In journalism, curiosity is the gravest crime. Yesterday, for example, a former Air Force officer who worked for years in military intelligence came forward as a whistleblower to reveal that the U.S. government has physical evidence of crashed non-human-made aircraft, as well as the bodies of the pilots who flew those aircraft. The Pentagon has spent decades studying these otherworldly remains in order to build more technologically advanced weapon systems. Okay, that's what the former intel officer revealed, and it was clear he was telling the truth. In other words, UFOs are actually real, and apparently so is extraterrestrial life. Now we know. In a normal country, this news would qualify as a bombshell, the story of the millennium. But in our country, it doesn't. The whistleblower's account ran on a technology website called The Debrief, which you've probably never heard of. The Washington Post had that story, but decided not to run it. The New York Times, meanwhile, just pretended it never happened. On the front page of the New York Times website this morning, there were five stories about Ukraine, as well as four stories apiece about Donald Trump, trans people, and climate change, the usual lineup. There was nothing at all about how an alien species is flying hypersonic aircraft over our cities. Not one word. So if you're wondering why our country seems so dysfunctional, this is a big part of the reason. Nobody knows what's happening. A small group of people control access to all relevant information, and the rest of us don't know. We're allowed to yap all we want about racism, but go ahead and talk about something that really matters and see what happens. If you keep it up, they'll make you be quiet. Trust us. That's how they maintain control. When Western tourists first started traveling in large numbers to the Soviet Union in the early 1970s, they found that many Russians had a completely warped understanding of the United States. They thought that Americans lived in grinding poverty, in a state of perpetual race war, and were desperate to flee to the freedom and prosperity of the Eastern Bloc. They thought this because that's what they had been told. They had no way to know otherwise. The few Russians who understood what was really going on in the rest of the world had learned about it from listening to shortwave radio broadcasts, sometimes under the covers so the neighbors wouldn't hear. 50 years later, it is bewildering to consider the ironies here. We're the ones who live in ignorance now. The U.S. government has managed to classify more than a billion so-called public documents. So at this point, we can't possibly know what our leaders are doing. We're not allowed to know. By definition, that is not a democracy. Yet it's fine with the media. Secrecy is a powerful tool of control. Stop asking how we got so rich. Here's another story about racism. Go eat each other. That's the program. That's how most of us now live here in the United States. Manipulated by lies, silenced by taboos. It is unhealthy and is dehumanizing, and we're tired of it. As of today, we've come to Twitter, which we hope will be the shortwave radio under the blankets. We're told there are no gatekeepers here. If that turns out to be false, we'll leave. But in the meantime, we are grateful to be here. We'll be back with much more very soon.
Whoa. Okay. Any thoughts on that one?
Do you realize how many things he mentioned that we're not supposed to talk about and that the media refuses to cover?
Yeah, all of them. Yeah. It was fantastic.
It was.
And that's why he's gone. That's why he's gone. They don't want this to be out. It's fascinating. There was a guy on WGN News this morning who went the exact opposite of the narrative of these wildfires and the ruling on the BLM, the definition of water, how devastating this is. And I just thought, oh, my gosh, you're not going to be around much longer because you're not supposed to critically think about what's going on and then speak out on this. Nice knowing you, buddy. And unless there is this glimmer of, would it be the people that are, that there are people who are seeing what's happening And they're like, oh, we're not going to let this happen. Like the guy that filmed the helicopter dripping fire out of it, the helicopter in Canada. They're setting those fires with liquid chemicals. Somebody videotaped that and put it out. And I'm like, bravo. Because without people like you, the truth's not going to get out.
Mm-hmm.
It's ironic that, you know, they would think that, oh, the arrogance and the futility of, well, we're canceling you. You're not on our TV show anymore. Do you realize nobody watches TV anymore?
Yeah.
Did you heard about the Twitter and this and that and Rumble and BitChute? And you can't keep him quiet.
Right.
But it is. It's wonderful, the stuff that he does talk about.
Like Ben Swan. Remember him? Like he dared to say something about Pizzagate. I mean, he didn't say it was real. He just covered the story and he got canned.
Right. Exactly. I thought, I thought it was interesting, just to shift gears a little bit, what he actually was talking about was the dam blowing up. There's intel that the Ukrainians lowered the water level of that dam days before this tragic accident happened, which is like, well, why would they do it? Oh, to lessen the severity of this controlled demolition that they're doing. I find it, their tactics of putting on a show for everyone in order to, it was like when my sister used to bite my arm or her arm and tell my dad that I did it and I get in trouble until her teeth fell out. And then it was kind of the bite marks didn't match. And it was like, I am not doing this to this child. And then there it was like, oh, she didn't get in trouble for lying, but it was kind of one of those things, and that's what he's doing with Putin. Putin's so mean and dirt, but give us more money. Look what he did now. People are seeing it for what it is. I find it fascinating that he'll put out the truth, but it's kind of like now they're talking about the Ukrainians blowing up Nordstrom, and I'm like, it was tied to the U.S., and now the U.S. is throwing the Ukrainians under the bus, it seems like. Because, oh, no, we didn't do that. They did that. When, and it's I'm just like, I wish that would be an asterisk in him. Now that he doesn't have anybody controlling him, can you tell everything instead of just, that's almost kind of like the narrative, too. Now that's what they want you to think, because the U.S. would never do that. But we got busted.
The day after the first episode came out, Fox News said they were going to sue him for talking on Twitter. So, but he came out with another episode. I guess he doesn't care.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and they can't, how could they possibly sue him? Okay, so the non-compete clause has to do with going to another company and making money.
Another network,
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is just, making money, period. It's like, but you can't have it both ways. You can't say that Twitter is, is not a place for news and it never will be. And then on the other hand say, oh, well, you're there and it's a conflict of interest. Yeah, you can't really do that. All he's really doing is he's a person on Twitter exercising his right to free speech. I don't know how they could possibly win.
They can't. But
that
and,
argument.
And, yeah, they can't. But I suppose they thought if they saber-rattled and threatened that he would back down. I guess they don't know Tucker Carlson very well. It's the same thing with Trump. The more you threaten them, the more they speak. That's just what they do.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So do you guys want to listen to the second one before the Good News Report?
I do.
Okay, cool.
I do.
All right.
We should give
no,
him
go ahead.
All the I was going to say, we should give him the spotlight just because it's been taken away from him. So anytime he's on, I think we should pay his
Amen.
Second.
Exactly.
All right.
Yeah.
Here you go. This is slightly longer. This is a 12-minute clip. But here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Hey, it's Tucker Carlson. Let's say you wanted to control a country. How would you start? We'd want to make sure you had the complete obedience of everybody inside your borders who was authorized to use deadly force. You would start with the military and then federal law enforcement and move your way down ultimately to agencies like the IRS. controlling the guns would be a top priority for you if you ever wanted to go dictatorial, if you wanted to be baby doc. But let's say you had deeper ambitions. Let's say you wanted the power not simply to control people's behavior, but to control how they think, not just their bodies, but their minds, as a god would. In that case, you need to take charge of the society's taboos. A taboo is something that by popular consensus is not allowed. A taboo may not be illegal, but it doesn't need to be. Over time, social prohibitions are more powerful and more enduring than laws. Societies are defined by what they will not permit, as are famously religions. Muslims don't eat pork, neither do Orthodox Jews. Traditional Christians oppose extramarital sex. The Amish avoid electricity, and so on. American society isn't overtly religious, but it's governed by taboos, and it always has been. What's interesting is how fast our taboos are changing. This is not happening organically. What we're allowed to dislike is being dictated to us from above, sometimes by force. Until fairly recently, for example, it was taboo in this country to attack people on the basis of their race. That was the main lesson of the Second World War, we were told again and again. The one thing we learned from the Nazis is that it's dangerous to reduce human beings to their genetic code. There is no master race. That made sense, but apparently we no longer believe it. Punishing people based on their skin color is not only permitted in modern America, it is mandatory throughout business and government and higher education, as long as the victims are white. At one time, that would have been unimaginable. So would the current behavior of our politicians. As recently as the 1992 presidential campaign, adultery was considered disqualifying for anyone seeking higher office. Bill Clinton was very nearly derailed in the New Hampshire primary by his affair with Jennifer Flowers. Clinton went to elaborate lengths to lie about the relationship because he had no choice. But he was the last presidential candidate who had to meet the standard. By 2008, it was obvious to anybody who was paying attention that Barack Obama had a strange and highly creepy personal life. Yet nobody ever asked him about it. By that point, a leader's behavior within his own marriage, the core relationship of his life, had been declared irrelevant. It was Barack Obama's business, not yours. One by one, with increasing speed, our old taboos have been struck down. Those that remain have lost their moral force. Stealing, flaunting your wealth, striking women, smoking marijuana on the street, shameless public hypocrisy, taking other people's money for not working. All of these things used to be considered unacceptable in America, not anymore. So it probably shouldn't surprise us that the greatest taboo of all is teetering on the edge of acceptability, child molestation. A generation ago, talking to someone else's children about sex was widely considered grounds for a thrashing. Touching them sexually was effectively a death penalty offense. When Jeffrey Dahmer was bludgeoned to death in the bathroom of a Wisconsin prison in 1994, the Milwaukee District Attorney had to caution the public not to turn Dahmer's killer into a folk hero. Jeffrey Dahmer had molested and murdered children. People felt justified in celebrating his death. 25 years later, that standard had changed dramatically in the state of Wisconsin, as in the rest of the country. In the summer of 2020, during the BLM riots in Kenosha, 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse defended his life from a convicted child molester called Joseph Rosenbaum. Rosenbaum was trying to kill Rittenhouse, so Rittenhouse shot him in self-defense. But it was Joseph Rosenbaum whom the media cast as the victim of the story. Kyle Rittenhouse, meanwhile, an underage boy fending off violence from a child molester, was denounced as the villain. Ultimately, he was indicted for murder. One of the things that this tells us is the people who run our country no longer see child molesters as the worst among us. It's never been more obvious than it was yesterday when the Wall Street Journal ran a long expose about kiddie porn on Instagram. Instagram, the journal found, quote, helps connect and promote a vast network of accounts openly devoted to the commission and purchase of underage sex content. Instagram connects pedophiles and connects them to content sellers of child pornography. In one instance, the paper discovered that Instagram was recommending the phrase incest toddlers to users who'd expressed interest in similar material. By the way, no one at Instagram denied that any of this had happened, nor did Mark Zuckerberg, who controls the company. The journal story was accurate. It was all pretty shocking, but not as shocking as what happened next, which was effectively nothing at all. The largest circulation newspaper in the United States revealed that one of the world's most influential companies was promoting pedophilia, and nobody in power did anything about it. The Justice Department did not announce an investigation. Congress did not schedule hearings. The guy who runs Instagram, Adam Mosseri, still has his job. In fact, Mosseri's last tweet, which is pinned, is a video of himself bragging about how effective Instagram's algorithm is. Keep in mind as you watch this, it's real.
People often talk about the algorithm, but there is no one algorithm for Instagram. There are many algorithms and ranking processes we use to try to personalize the experience to make it as interesting as we can for each and every person who uses Instagram. We believe in this idea of personalization. What you're interested in and what I'm interested in is different, and so therefore your Instagram and my Instagram should be different.
What you're interested in and what I'm interested in is different, Mosseri explains patiently. Your Instagram feed will be different from mine. You're interested in children. That's why you're getting all the incest toddler posts. It's a highly personalized experience. That tweet is still up tonight. Of course, everybody at Instagram, in fact, everyone everywhere in authority, will still claim to think that child molestation is bad. But the tone has changed unmistakably. When they say it's bad, they mean it in a kind of abstract way. Bad like a civil war in Central Africa is bad. You wouldn't prefer it, but there are reasons it happens. That's why we now refer to pedophiles as minor attracted persons, because honestly, who can judge? These people are a sexual minority, so pause before you attack them. And in any case, it's not like pedophiles are barging into the Capitol building to sit in Nancy Pelosi's chair or asking uncomfortable questions about the last election. For miscreants like that, no punishment is too harsh. So far this month, the FBI's Washington field office has issued 11 press releases. 10 out of 11 have been about January 6th. Keep in mind that January 6th happened more than 2.5 years ago. Now you know why the feds were ignoring kid touchers on Instagram. They're too busy to respond. They've got much more important things to do, like finding white supremacists. White supremacists are America's new child molesters. We've got zero tolerance for white supremacists because no one threatens the life of this country more than they do. Here's Joe Biden once again making that very clear last month.
Stand up against the poison of white supremacy as I did my inaugural address to a single out as the most dangerous terrorist threat to our homeland is white supremacy. I'm not saying this because I'm at a black HBCU. I say it wherever I go.
Pardon the feedback, but you heard the point. White supremacy is the most dangerous threat to the American homeland. Joe Biden just told us that. It's more dangerous than the threat of nuclear war with Russia. It's more dangerous than the threat of the Mexican drug cartels, who've already killed hundreds of thousands of Americans and are now in control of swaths of our southwestern states. White supremacy is that bad, Joe Biden says. In fact, it's worse. But what is it? That's the question. Can anyone in authority actually define white supremacy? What is it? Is white supremacy liking white people too much? If so, that's going to put those of us with white children in a pretty tough spot. Or is white supremacy something much more obviously bad, like trying to expel all non-whites from America and creating some kind of ethnostate? If that's Joe Biden's definition, what exactly is the scope of this threat? How many people are currently working on this American white ethnostate project? And what are the chances they're going to pull it off? Our guess is not very many and precisely zero. But we can't say for sure because no one has showed us the numbers. These are not rhetorical questions. When the President of the United States describes something as the worst possible crime Americans can commit, you have a right to know what that crime is. You used to have that right. Under our pre-revolutionary legal code before George Floyd, questions like these were easy to answer. A crime was defined as something that an elected legislature had explicitly banned, usually an act that hurt somebody else. In America, crimes were described precisely with words in English and then preserved in books, which you could read yourself. If you ever wondered whether you were committing a crime, you could just look it up. You could know for sure whether you were a criminal. Now you can't. And needless to say, that's the point. The point of the exercise is to keep you off balance, to keep you afraid. When no one's willing to define the offense, you can't be sure whether or not you're committing it. You could be accused at any time and everything you have taken from you. You live in fear. Remember this guy?
Emmanuel Cafferty was driving near a Black Lives Matter protest in Poway in his SDG&E truck when he says he noticed somebody following him and trying to get his attention.
I'm going to stop it there for a second. We'll get right back to it. But Poway is in San Diego. And
yes.
SDG&E is San Diego Gas and Electric. So that's our electric company. So that, yeah. All right, here we go.
And later, that person posted a picture of him making what some believed is a white supremacy symbol on Twitter. Cafferty says he had no idea about any white power symbols and was just cracking his knuckles outside his window when the picture was taken of him. Later that day, he says he was notified by SDG&E that he would be suspended pending an investigation. And a few days later, he was fired.
What that man did was so offensive, as you just saw, that local news had to blur the photograph of his hand. He was fired from his job. His life was destroyed for cracking his knuckles. He didn't know cracking his knuckles was racist in his defense, but then nobody did until the day that poor Emmanuel Cafferty was unwise enough to crack them. When a crime has no definition, anyone can be guilty of it. It's hard to relax in a country like that. The old system was better. Government operated on the basis of laws, not amorphous moral terror. Politicians couldn't accuse you of something they couldn't define. The legal code was straightforward. Child molestation was a crime. Having unfashionable opinions was not. Outside of the public sphere, the population mostly governed itself, as it does in every society, and used taboos to do it. You knew what was allowed and what wasn't because the rules didn't change very often. The taboos were organic. They derived from collective experience and instinct, the two most reliable guides to life. They evolved for a reason. They still do. Our job at this point is to protect them, despite the hectoring, the nonstop hectoring from the people in charge. You know the outlines of right and wrong. You're born knowing them. So don't let them talk you out of what you can smell. Don't let them rationalize away your intuitive moral sense. Cling to your taboos like your life depends on them, because it does. Cherish and protect them like family heirlooms. That's exactly what they are.
All right.
Badass.
Episode 1 and 2. And of course, and like I said, I believe that the reason, my opinion, that the second clip, the second monologue did not do as well is because it went against the pedophilia algorithms of Twitter. When I first started posting on Twitter, all I posted were videos of arrests, pedophilia arrests around the time that Donald Trump took office. That's all I posted. And if you look back on my Twitter from that time, all of them are gone. I had no engagement. And I don't have as many followers on Twitter as I do on Facebook, but I still have a couple thousand and nobody saw it. Nobody. And so I believe that's why he took such a hit in
Yes. And here's the thing. It's still one of the biggest ones on Twitter, right? Even with the views cut in half.
Yes.
Yes, but it definitely is the algorithm. And I shared it and I was able to share it. And so did a few million of my closest friends. Here's the thing. I'm on my fourth Twitter account, and
such a rabble.
Yeah.
Rabble.
Yeah, I know.
Rabble with a good cause.
Rabble with a good cause.
Exactly.
I had a couple of thousand followers on my other one, my old one. Still makes me sad.
Maybe you'll get it back one day. Maybe you will.
No, they told me it's a permanent ban. I tried.
Okay.
I tried. General Flynn followed me on that account.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's my account.
Maybe they'll give it, maybe one of these days.
We got to get you to one of those events to meet him in person. Now, he's on the road again with a whole bunch of freedom fighters.
I would love to shake his hand.
Canada.
So one of the reasons why I got banned on Twitter, there was this one account that had us, all of his followers, take the oath with General Flynn, the oath of what a military person
or a congressperson, an elected representative. I had to take the oath when I signed my my paperwork to run for Congress, when my name was on the ballot, I had to sit in the registrar's office and take that oath.
Yes. And so every single one of those accounts, when they took down President Trump's account, they took all of those accounts down too.
Ew.
Oops, wow.
Just like they're using, just like when they go into the people's homes, like the January 6th people's homes, and they find a copy of the Constitution and they use it as evidence of insurrection.
No shit. Okay, let's talk about that because
quickly though, because it is time for the good news report. Go ahead.
Well, just real quick, the Oath Keepers. They are now the white supremacists and the leader of the Oath Keepers.
I know.
Sequestered for life, right? Now, what is the Oath Keepers? They took an oath to support the Constitution of the United States, and now they are the evil Dracoans. They must be taken away. Now, the one thing that's been brought up a lot, and even Biden talked about, it's a threat to the homeland. Not the nation, not the United States of America, but the homeland. Now, this homeland that they've decided to put up as a you know, bastion of salvation for you and you're a threat. That is just like Germany, the fatherland, the homeland. They've subverted our country with this, you know, who's the deep state? The homeland security. And to go against everyone and the Constitution, it's quite time for everyone to kind of open your eyes.
Time.
Both keepers are not
past
angels. They are our heroes, and they still are our heroes. It's time for the good news report.
Mm-hmm.
Love you.
okay, so you wanted me to play that one clip.
That's my intro. Yeah.
Yeah. But what I'd like to do, I hope it's okay, is I'd like to play the non-musical one first so people can hear what Comey actually says.
Yes. Okay.
And then I'll play the musical.
As Danielle gets ready to play this, just to set it up, the thing that they have indicted Trump for is violating national security, supposedly, and having classified documents in his possession, and quoting, additionally, they're saying that he shared them with other people, showed them to other people.
Yeah.
Our argument is, first of all, there we have unequal justice in our country. Hillary Clinton did all that and a bag of chips times 100, and she absolutely did not have the authorization that the President of the United States does, and she was let off the hook on some fake, made-up bullshit. Go.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Now let me tell you what we found. Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. For example, 7 email chains concern matters that were classified at the top secret special access program at the time they were sent and received. Those chains involve Secretary Clinton both sending emails about those matters and receiving emails about those same matters. There is evidence to support a conclusion that any reasonable person in Secretary Clinton's position or in the position of those with whom she was corresponding about those matters should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation. In addition to this highly sensitive information, we also found information that was properly classified as secret by the U.S. intelligence community at the time it was discussed on email. That is, excluding any later up-classified emails. None of these emails should have been on any kind of unclassified system, but their presence is especially concerning because all of these emails were housed on unclassified personal servers, not even supported by full-time security staff, like those found at agencies and departments of the United States government, or even with a commercial email service like Gmail. I think it's also important to say something about the marking of classified information. Only a very small number of the emails here containing classified information bore markings that indicated the presence of classified information. But even if information is not marked classified in an email, Participants who know or should know that the subject matter is classified are still obligated to protect it. And while not the focus of our investigation, we also developed evidence that the security culture of the State Department, in general and with respect to the use of unclassified systems in particular, was generally lacking in the kind of care for classified information that's found elsewhere in the U.S. government. With respect to potential computer intrusion by hostile actors, we did not find direct evidence that Secretary Clinton's personal email domain, in its various configurations since 2009, was hacked successfully. But given the nature of the system and of the actors potentially involved, we assess we would be unlikely to see such direct evidence. We do assess that hostile actors gained access to the private commercial email accounts of people with whom Secretary Clinton was in regular contact from her personal account. We also assess that Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email domain was both known by a large number of people and readily apparent. She also used her personal email extensively while outside the United States, including sending and receiving work-related emails in the territory of sophisticated adversaries. Given that combination of factors, we assess it is possible that hostile actors gained access to Secretary Clinton's personal email account. So that's what we found. Finally, with...
Sorry, my bad.
Okay, that's all right. That was actually... what's left? Just saying that he decided no reasonable prosecutor?
Prosecutor, yes, would bring charges.
Okay.
And but now
but
the
actually,
musical
so,
version.
So technically that's the most important part.
I know, I'm sorry. I was trying to like make it so that I had the next one up and ready to play. My bad. I'm not a professional at this. But now the musical version. Are you guys ready for the musical version?
Ready.
All right. The sound quality might be not be great. That's why I played the first one. But here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Good morning. I'm here to give you an update on the FBI's investigation of Secretary
Sounds
Clinton.
Fine.
What I want to do is tell you what we're recommending. But first, let me tell you what we found. 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined to contain classified information.
What difference at this point does it make?
8 of those chains were top secret. 36 of those chains secret. And 8 contained confidential information.
What difference at this point?
Everything I did was admitted. There was no law, no regulations.
Secretary Clinton should have known that an unclassified system was no place for that conversation.
I did not email any classified material to anyone on my email.
None of these emails should have been on any kind of classified system, not even email.
But first of all, nothing was marked classified.
To the contrary.
Nothing was marked classified.
There is evidence. Now let me tell you what we found.
Oh my gosh.
110 emails.
It was not the best choice.
52 email chains.
It was a mistake.
Have been determined to contain classified information.
And what difference at this point does it make?
8 of those chains were absent.
What's the best choice?
6 of those chains.
I said it was a mistake.
8 contained confidential information.
And what difference at this point does it make?
With respect to our recommendation, it's going to be an unusual statement. Prosecutor would bring such a case. I know there will be an end to the debate. I know there will be an end to the debate. I know there will be an end to the debate. To the debate.
What difference at this point does it make?
110 emails.
It wasn't the best choice.
52 email chains.
I made a mistake.
Have been determined to contain classified information.
What difference at this point does it make?
8 of those chains were
absolutely not a good choice.
6 of those chains.
I said it was a mistake.
Confidential information.
What difference at this point does it make?
I don't know about you guys, but I was dancing the whole time.
I was
and
dancing.
Crying.
And
crying.
Crying. Yes. Because we remember.
Mm-hmm. I remember exactly where I was and what I was doing when Comey
Me
did
too.
This. I was sitting on a boat in Shelter Island Basin. It was right during a was it 4th of July weekend, right? That
yep.
he did that?
Yes.
I remember sitting in the V berth of a boat watching this live, and then jaw to the floor when he said this. We were doing something called a raft up, meaning it's a bunch of boats that kind of tie up together, and we have fun, right? And so, and one of the boats that we were tied up to, my lawyer, one of my best friends, I co-own a dog with her, who happened to be a prosecutor for the state of California at one point. She goes, I prosecute, you know,
I
like
would.
That's,
yes.
Yeah, she, and I'm reasonable and I'm a prosecutor. I would prosecute. It just didn't make any sense at all to anybody who was paying attention. And I even remember trolls coming out and say, not trolls, people I knew, but they were just like shit lib Democrats. Sorry. Saying, well, they can't really prosecute during a presidential cycle. That would be unethical. Here we are.
Well, here we are. And here we are. So, good news report, I'm going to quote Donald Trump.
Oh.
Okay? This was from the day after he was indicted. He gave a speech to the North Carolina GOP. Former President Donald Trump will tell the crowd at the North Carolina Republican Party convention that we are going to fight the globalist vultures in the Washington swamp, just as we did before, and we're going to win. I put everything on the line, and I will not yield. I will never be deterred, and I will never stop fighting for you. With your vote, we will take back our country from these fascists and thugs, and we will make America great again. They've launched one hoax and witch hunt after another, try to stop our movement and thwart the will of the American people. It's called election interference. That was his answer to being indicted by a special counsel grand jury. So now I'm going to read a couple of words about what we know about that, about what they found. What we know about the DOJ special counsel is terrifying. This is Gateway Pundit. When Jack Smith was named special counsel to look into multiple cases against former President Donald Trump, he was painted by the media as an impartial man, a war crimes prosecutor in The Hague who'd cut his teeth in New York prosecuting state and federal crimes, including the brutal beating of a Haitian immigrant by police. He'd come to the top of the Department of Justice Public Integrity Unit, what a joke, in 2010 after then Attorney General Eric Holder needed to clean house because of an embarrassing overturned conviction against former Alaska Senator Ted Stevens, which, by the way, is the vanguard for political prosecutions, in which it was revealed, according to the Associated Press, the Public Integrity Section had withheld exculpatory evidence from the Republican lawmakers' legal team. Sound familiar? Since then, we've learned a great deal about Smith, his five-year tenure at the head of the Public Integrity Unit, and what he's been up to since then, including about the overturned guilty verdicts against Republican lawmakers he was responsible for prosecuting. His association with one infamous Obama-era figure and his wife's association with Michelle Obama herself. That glowing war crimes prosecutor copy was from the AP reporting on Smith's appointment as special counsel by Attorney General Merrick Garland in November of last year. Jack Smith told the Associated Press in an interview in 2010 that he'd read about the Stevens case and couldn't resist the chance to step in and run the section. I had a dream job and I had no desire to leave it, but opportunities like this don't come up very often, Smith said. I left the dream job for a better one. Well, now he has the dream indictment of any career Democrat, a 37-count indictment against Trump, including charges of willful retention of national defense information, conspiracy to obstruct justice, and false statements, according to Fox News. But wait, isn't Smith supposed to be impartial? Even Jonathan Turley, a constitutional law scholar who has often sided with Trump in the past, called it an extremely damning indictment from a serious prosecutor which is a whole different ballgame than the charges filed by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg. Trump, for his part, called Smith a deranged lunatic in a post on Truth Social, right? So what we're told about what's in the indictment and what's really in there isn't true. So this is the reckoning. It's Seth J. Levy, person that I follow on Twitter, Truth Social, Telegram, you name it. He's one of my favorite humans. Seth J. Levy says, okay, so having read the indictment, here's what they want to throw Trump in jail for a century over. He was trying to tell the story of how the Department of Defense, here we go again, Danielle, wanted him to start a war with Iran. Not that he wanted to, that they wanted him to. But he was being respectful of the secrecy involved. The problem he had is how to tell the true story of his first term without harming the country. The warmongers wanted to use Trump to start World War III, and now they are going to try to imprison him for the rest of his life for having the audacity to think you should know what they wanted to do. That's why. That's the stuff that they're saying that he,
I am so glad that man said that, because WikiLeaks, this is continuation of the persecution of Julian Assange, war secrets to secrets, and that's why they let that out.
Yeah, I think so, it was a mistake for Trump not to have taken him under his wing, Assange under his wing, and protected him. I think that might have been a mistake.
So I have a thread about that.
Julian Assange
is literally about to be expedited for violating the Espionage Act, and now you have the Justice Department attempting to charge Trump with violating the exact same act. You couldn't time the two events together more perfectly. It appears like storm clouds are coalescing into something much bigger and greater. That's ultra Pepe. It's Pepe Lives Matter. And, one of the things that they have done over and over and over again is try to stifle the voices of what they call QAnon. And you know that I call them Anons. And he's one of them. So here we go. Julie Kelly says, first thing I want to tell you is breaking. Sources say Special Counsel Jack Smith does not actually have the supposed smoking gun document Trump is heard on an audio talking about, which means he cannot prove it. He cannot prove it is classified and thus prove Trump knew it was classified. Prosecutors have no real evidence to show jurors. Here is Jay Bratt, DOJ counterintelligence chief, admitting to Judge Cannon last year that the 300 or so docs were presumptively deemed classified. This is why the DOJ fought tooth and nail against a third party to review the inventory. Shall I go on? It'll be fun watching this case implode under the trash heap. In the footnotes, it says that the subpoena sought documents bearing classified markings, and the response did not turn any up. That's in the footnotes of the indictment. There isn't a magic declassified stamp that appears on every paper the president declassified. What they're admitting is there's strong possibility docs that still have classified markings were indeed declassified by Trump. So their whole case, depending on whether Trump had, and keep in mind, it's also, he kept all the Spygate stuff. He declassified all of it. And pop quiz, con law scholars, who is the only person in the federal government that has the ultimate authority to declassify any document in the...
Me.
Pick Danielle, go.
Henry. The president.
Yes.
Yes.
Ding, 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 ding. You win. The president has the ultimate authority to declassify any document that comes across his desk. And no, there isn't a magic stamp. He just says it, and it is so, like a king in that case.
Almost like an executive order, huh?
Just like that.
Precisely.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Well, they finally did it. The powers that be actually indicted Donald Trump. After the regime weaponized a bogus dossier, spied on his campaign, hamstrung his policy, impeached him again, defamed him as a racist Nazi, made his supporters fear isolation and employment retribution, lied about him in every way imaginable on every news station and in every paper every day, and rigged elections against him, they're finally taking him down with some paperwork. These papers are criminal, you see, because they have classification markings, and they were in Trump's possession, and they were part of a documents dispute. Keep that word in mind, dispute. Pay no attention to the fact that the DOJ won't even tell the court specifically what's in the documents, meaning they can claim this is a very serious matter, Scout's honor. No evidence available to the contrary. Or that as president, Trump possessed declassification authority that wouldn't have belonged to, say, a Secretary of State or Vice President. Speak of the devil, ignore that Hillary Clinton, Joe Biden, Mike Pence, and Barack Obama all have their own documents dispute. So did Bill Clinton. They found some in a sock drawer. Some more serious than Trump's without facing any criminal charges. The whole Mar-a-Lago fiasco, which involved the FBI sending dozens of plainclothes agents to raid the former president's estate and dig through his wife's closet, started when a disgruntled backbench National Archives bureaucrat tattled because he didn't like the look of Trump's banker's box. So, the dispute happened about the time that President Trump was leaving office. Okay, so I just want to just do a little bit of backstory. President Clinton, President Bush, and President Obama, the National Archives, before they left office, went to each respective town where they were going to have their presidential library, set up a building with a SCIF. SCIF means secure something, 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 something. I don't know. It's a place where it's secure, the documents, okay? And they all took their presidential papers for their presidential library.
Okay, do you want to know the definition or the meaning of SCIF?
Go, SCIF.
Sensitive, compartmented information facility.
Okay, that's a SCIF.
Mm.
So they didn't do it for Trump. So as he's leaving office and he has all these boxes of papers, just like every other president, the FBI goes to Mar-a-Lago, looks around, makes a decision about where they can a room they can secure. Again, it was like as he's leaving office, which is highly unusual. And they picked a bathroom. It was a fancy bathroom with gold fixtures, of course. They provided the lock and said, "We accept this." They made some adjustments to this bathroom to keep it safe, and they walked away. The next thing you know, his home is being raided by the very FBI that approved the place to have those documents, and then they're taking pictures of documents on floors, documents in bathrooms. So let's go back to the Clintons. A trove of Clinton White House records, long processed for release, remains hidden from the public view at the Clinton Presidential Library in Little Rock. This was Politico in 2014.
Can you tell the other story you told me when
okay.
you were looking up?
That's,
yeah.
You're right. Thank you for saying that. So I did a search today, and I did it for all three presidents, and the search was, when did Bill Clinton, remove documents from the White House? And then there were 100 stories that popped up. The first 10, though, were PolitiFact or fact checkers saying, don't believe what President Trump and his minions are saying. It's different. Just like that. Okay, the first 10 stories. And then, of course, I had to dig and dig and dig. And I wanted older stories when they were telling the truth, sort of. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Bill Clinton has a bunch of documents in his library that no one's allowed to see. Even though the legal basis initially used to withhold them expired more than a year ago, the papers contain confidential advice given to or sought by President Bill Clinton, including communications with then First Lady Hillary Clinton and records about people considered for appointments to federal office. So he says, about 33,000 pages of documents. Is that 33 again? Isn't that interesting? 33,000. Where have we heard that number for? Pop quiz.
Illuminati. Freemason. No,
that's how many emails she deleted. 33,000.
Well, but it's also Freemason.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Another mocking us. Did you find any stories about them taking the furniture from the Lincoln bedroom when they were leaving the White House?
I've read those stories, though.
In China? China?
Oh, my God.
Okay, but the interesting part of this story is, unlike collections and other hands, the withheld files at the Clinton Library are under the control of the federal government. Obama would have to choose whether to back any privilege assertion by ex-president, a move that would be in tension with public statements Obama made as a candidate and as a president, promising to improve access to presidential records. Even the long delays in accessing the files raise significant questions about whether reforms Obama imposed on his first day in office are working. After a series of inquiries from Politico, this article was written in 2014, by the way. In recent days, an official with the, was it 2016?
You told me 2014 on the phone.
2014. After a series of inquiries from Politico in recent days, an official with the current White House said Tuesday afternoon that a large batch of the formerly withheld Clinton records would emerge soon. I wonder if they ever did. The aide who asked not to be named did not say precisely when that clearance was given. However, he added, there have been no executive privilege assertions. Now, Bush. Another Politico article that was from 2014. Interesting. Bush surprises on White House records. President Bush, George W. Bush, whose White House was legendary for its secrecy, seems to have turned over a new leaf in his post-presidency. A previously undisclosed directive Bush signed almost 2 years ago, or 2 years after leaving office, could result in many of his official records becoming public faster than those of his predecessor, President Bill Clinton, experts say, a move that's drawing praise from unlikely quarters. On Friday, the latest batch of 7,300 pages of this, it was a Clinton era. The relatively expansive directive stands in contrast to Bush's approach to the public's right to know while he was in office, because they hit a lot of stuff the Bushes did. That was a tight, no-leak administration. They tried. Didn't work. How about the Obamas? The White House's missing documents. It's a picture of Obama with Joe Biden standing smiling behind him. It's from Politico in 2009. In his first weeks in office, President Barack Obama shut down his predecessor's system for reviewing regulations, realigned and expanded two key White House policymaking bodies, and extended economic sanctions against parties to the conflict in the African nation of Côte d'Ivoire. Despite the intense scrutiny a president gets just after inauguration, Obama managed to take all these actions with nary a mention from the White House press corps. Well, we remember because they weren't a press corps then. They were stenographers, like they are now. They came to light only because the official paperwork was transmitted to the Federal Register, a dense daily compendium of regulatory actions and other formal notices prepared by the National Archives. One of them was what to do with presidential records. It says Where is it? Oh, damn. Another Obama executive order signed January 3rd canceled two Bush-era executive order regulating to regulatory review. This is the part. The White House did release Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel memo halting regulations in the works at federal agencies, but didn't release another Obama memo setting a 100-day deadline. Okay, so the memo was about regulatory review and reviewing documents. Anyway, that was the gist of that. Okay, so we have it all set up for our buddy Merrick Garland to raid Mar-a-Lago. President Biden became the first president to raid his predecessor, President Trump's home, on August 8, 2022. 30 FBI agents in plain clothes reportedly arrived on scene at 9 a.m. and didn't leave till 6:30 p.m. They went through Melania Trump's wardrobe and spent several hours inside former President Donald Trump's private office, breaking open his safe and rifling through drawers during the raid of Mar-a-Lago, according to the New York Post. Although the search warrant used by the FBI to enter the palatial Palm Beach property focused solely on presidential records and evidence of classified information being stored there, FBI agents seized classified records from former President Donald Trump's home at Mar-a-Lago during an unprecedented raid, including some marked top secret. So there we go. Two people now have come forward or gone on the news to say, sending a message, a trial balloon, that if Donald Trump drops out of the race, then Joe Biden should drop the case.
What?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, an offer you can't refuse. Now, what
He's
about the laptop and the FBI refuses to
So the last thing that I want to talk about, thank you very much, Elizabeth, for bringing that up, is on the day
time.
That Alvin Bragg announced his indictment of Donald Trump, what was the story that popped up, Danielle? Say it. My brain's not bringing it back.
Oh, it has something to do with Biden and Ukraine.
Well, that
it was a House. It was an oversight committee.
$5 billion. Blah blah blah.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well, so no. All right. Because on the day that they indicted Trump for the Mar-a-Lago raid was the same day that they read the documents in the SCIF, the Oversight Committee went into the SCIF and read the document about the bribery. Okay, so that you'll be surprised to know that we're talking about the same case that Donald Trump was impeached for. It's the same Shokin. It's the same prosecutors. It's the same actors that Donald Trump was impeached for a phone call to the Ukrainian president saying, find out what happened. And if you remember, so back to what he was impeached for, that the inference was that there was this quote-unquote quid pro quo, that if you find out what happened with Joe Biden bribing those officials – I'll give you your money for weapons, which didn't happen. It was a perfect phone call. He was impeached and then acquitted by the Senate. That was the first impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But come to find out that there is an active case of as soon as they did what Joe Biden wanted, him and Hunter Biden were each given $5 million. There was $10 million that was given to him, and it's all on record. So the thing that Donald Trump wanted the president of Ukraine at that time to find out really happened, and he's going to be impeached. Joseph R. Biden is going to be impeached by our government, and they opened this stuff up themselves. They did this to themselves. It's going to backfire on them.
Can I just interrupt really quick?
Go.
This is a very quick clip. Starts out by saying in 2006, Ukrainian Prosecutor General Viktor Shokin is in his investigation of corruption involving Burisma Holding, a natural gas company, identified Hunter Biden as the recipient of over $3 million from the company. And this clip that was an interview Biden gave to the Council on Foreign Relations.
There you go. This is it. This is what he got paid for. This particular thing right here. You're right.
Yes.
Let's play it. Go.
Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1. Okay, not one. Okay.
Whoops.
No, no, we're here. It's another little text.
Yeah.
There we go.
I remember going over convincing our team, our others, to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, I guess, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to the press conference. I said, we're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. You're not getting $1 billion. You're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. I think it was, 6 hours. I looked, I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Oh, son of a bitch. Got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid.
Yep, there it is.
13th, 2020.
That's all. That's it. You know, and that's what Trump on this perfect phone call asked Zelensky about.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, take it away.
And now we're on the brink of World War III, all because Trump started questioning what they were doing in Ukraine. And it sounds like behind the scenes he was questioning a whole lot of stuff. So Seth J. Levy says it's because of the Iran stuff. A bunch of other people that I follow say because they were trying to get back the Spygate stuff because they're protecting Obama, which Iran also with Obama. So okay, so you know, then again, we have the inference of it could be because he was messing around with their Ukraine stuff. So when he said, I'm going back the day you elect me and I'm going to go take these bastards on again in the name of Jesus, it's totally backfired in relation to the current 2024 cycle. One would think that when a presidential candidate gets indicted, that his poll numbers would drop, that the American people would gasp in horror and withdraw their support. In the straw poll yesterday in Iowa, he's even higher above Ron DeSantis, which, by the way, can I just say, I would be happy with either candidate because I like Ron DeSantis, and it doesn't really matter all the back and forth crazy stuff that's going on. I don't care about that stuff. It's politics. It's a blood sport. But I believe if I had my deepest wish and prayer, we would get the opportunity to jump right back up in their face and say, ha ha, MFers, we told you we would never stop. We're coming. We're going to keep coming.
I'm sorry, but a dream team ticket would be Trump and RFK Jr.
Wouldn't that be great? I know. It would be wonderful.
Well, actually, you know what? He would be good on the cabinet. Bobby would be good.
Yeah, making the HHS
DeSantis,
guy. Yeah.
DeSantis and Trump would be the dream team. Because
it can't happen unless one of the two move, and DeSantis can't. You cannot have a presidential ticket where a vice president and a president are
from the same state.
Residing in the same state.
No. It's not that you can't. It's that they will never do it because they always pick a vice presidential candidate that can help them bring home another state. They already got Florida freaking tied up nine ways from Sunday.
Well, not only that, but it's more than that. It has more. There's also this element of the Electoral College where the electoral votes from Florida would not be counted.
Right. Okay. Oh, well, so you just actually taught me something. I'll have to look that up.
Well, Clay and Buck taught me that.
Interesting. Okay. So that's all I got today. I was sad when the day he got indicted. I called Danielle and told her that I was sad. It was a sad day for our country. Everybody keeps using the term banana republic when you arrest your political opponents. That's really, truly where we're at. Because they know they can't beat him in an election that they can't cheat in like they did in 2020 because of COVID. And besides that, there's a wonderful man named Scott Pressler running around the country teaching Republicans how to harvest ballots the way the Democrats do. So they're not going to be able to pull it off. But just before we went on the air, something came up from the Daily Mail on the COVID scam, and they're getting closer and closer to determining, which we all know. That the virus came from a lab, which, again, speaking of these people will do anything to win a freaking election, COVID itself. So scientists at the Wuhan Institute of Virology were running risky experiments to create deadly mutant coronaviruses by fusing newly discovered strains just before the outbreak of COVID-19. U.S. investigators believe COVID-19 was created by scientists at the Wuhan lab. Where did it go? It freaking disappeared. Bastards. They don't want me to read it online.
Well, take your time. If you can find it, I'd like to hear it.
I got it. I just went right back to the spot. I have it all open because U.S. investigators believe COVID-19 was created by scientists at the Wuhan lab through experiments on a similar coronavirus discovered in a mine shaft in southern China. Researchers at the Wuhan Institute of Virology were fusing deadly coronaviruses to create highly infectious mutant strains that were then used to infect albino mice, the U.S. investigators claim. The research program was kept secret and covered up due to it being funded by the Chinese military with the aim of developing bioweapons, the investigators believe. The secret initiative in turn led to the creation of COVID-19, which was then leaked into the city of Wuhan through a lab accident before it spread across the globe, the U.S. investigators claim. Chinese authorities, however, failed to report fatalities linked to the new coronavirus that was discovered in the Mojang mine shaft. Instead, the mine shaft viruses were taken back to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, where researchers launched a classified research program. So we're getting closer and closer. Part that I still question was whether it was accidental or not, and I you will never convince me that it was.
Well, there's so much.
Did I lose you guys?
You're still there. But okay. they have evidence going back to like 2014 that they've been trashing these psyops. They've been doing dry runs for this. And
yes.
If they were smart, they would wipe those out. They would scrub that evidence of all these government programs. But this was
Elizabeth, why should they? They have the protection of the United States government and the Chinese government.
I know.
They've been doing whatever the hell they want to do.
I know. I mean, arresting Trump is just a cherry on a Sundae. They've been offing the heads of everyone from starting with Bill Cosby, who dared to question Obama's credibility, and they decimated him, and all the way through every credible journalist that they've silenced, every American that they've taken and rounded up for their political views. This has been going on for way too many years, and too many things have been.
I'm sure of it.
It is. It's like reading the Rise of Mao is what it is.
Yeah.
And
it's like reading 1984. So
yeah.
Here's what I want you guys to do. I want you to listen to Trump's interview with Tucker on Tuesday, and we'll chat about it when we come back next week. I want you to pay attention, again, as usual, this is always our warning, to the things that they're not talking about. on the mainstream media, because there's always way more stuff under the surface. And then trust our Father God in heaven. So today I picked our very first blackberry. There was three of them that were ripe. And a dear friend was here. And there's a part of the Bible where we talk about first fruits. First fruits, mm-hmm. the first thing that you pick or harvest are supposed to be shared with someone deserving, someone who's poor, someone who's needy. This lady wasn't, but mm-hmm. she's just a dear friend. I gave her a chicken, a hen,
nice.
And three blackberries. And
nice.
But she does, the reason why, you know, I cherish her is because she runs a rescue. She doesn't rescue dogs. She doesn't rescue cats. She rescues roosters.
Oh,
and it's a really great, it's called Rescue Roo Adopt a Cock is the name of her mm-hmm. Ministry, I guess, or, you know, nonprofit, whatever you want to call it. And she's doing the
charity.
Lord's work.
Rescue.
Yeah, it's a cool charity. So consider a donation to them if you want to help animals that need your help. Because roosters are, people get rid of them because we can't have them. And she adopts them back out to people who actually can have a rooster, and it's cool. Most of them don't get adopted because there's so many of them. But anyway, so she got the first fruits today, and if you like, maybe you just Google first fruits and find out what the Lord has to say about it. Peace mm-hmm. be upon all who are listening today. Take care. I'm going to go feed my chickens.
Aw, amen.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks, baby.
Bye, you guys. Have a great day.
Love you.
I love you.
Bye-bye.
On that note, I'd like to just say hi to everybody who's listening on online. And we've got one person. Looks like they're listening through Skype. If you want to be a part of the show, press 1. We'd love to hear from you. If not, welcome. But yeah, that makes me very happy that that we've got people out there that want to help out with roosters and everything else Mom said too. I know it's like kind of feels like it's sad news, but it's you know, things are happening and people are waking up and minds are being changed, and I'm grateful for that.
Mhm. Yeah, you know, I've stopped listening to the news because it brings you down, and it's been a never-ending character assassination of Trump. You know, it's almost like this, the barrage of the propaganda and brainwashing. It's just, there are other things that are going on in the world that I don't want to hear about this anymore, because it doesn't actually affect your actual environment of the day, you know? So it's mm-hmm. kind of like you remove it from your mind and from your reality, and you create your own reality where your mom is so cool, because I remember my mom was like that too. We had berry bushes and raspberries, and those were like the most delicate, really funnest things for her to see sprout up. And when there was a berry, kind of like you almost didn't want to share them because there were so few of them as they ripened one at a time. And what your mom just did reminded me so much of my mom and how she shared the joy of how precious berries are, fresh berries off the vine. And that brought back a little childhood memory for me. But it's those little things. That's really what life is about, is mm-hmm. enjoying nature, your family, having the strength and the courage and the backbone and the confidence to know that it's okay to own a rooster. How dare you tell me I have a rooster anywhere? When we stopped if we didn't stand up for our roosters, no wonder we don't have free speech. It's like,
right.
You can't let these people. You know what I'm saying? I'm like,
well, and then,
I'm sorry.
And then what, I mean, this is Pride Month, right? Like, how do you know that rooster crowing?
Let's, you know what? I almost don't want to play their game, but we could play it to win. We play by their rules. You know, we all identify as, you know, like I said, I identify as John Wayne. So Watch out. Seriously, this is insane. But you do not let people see the wind out from under your wings.
Right.
And we need to, like, collectively support each other in what is right. And it's okay to be right. It's okay to stand up and, no, I'm so sorry. Not everything merges into this quagmire of gray soup that you want. It's,
yeah.
There are distinctions. There is good and bad. There's right and wrong. And there's things I like and then things I don't like. And it's okay. I can, you know, this is my yard. Get out of my yard. You know, it's okay
right.
to not be part of the community, so to speak. I saw this
right.
thing that was just, it really disturbed me. And it resonated so much. It was a symposium compilation video of how we were brainwashed so quickly and so effectively with this COVID operation, a psychological operation brought to you by the military industrial complex. And this, we're in it all together. We're in it all together. You know, they separated us, but they scared us to death. With a story, you know, like I said, you know, nobody was, you know, bleeding from the eyeballs and our skin wasn't falling off our bones like we thought when we heard biological labs and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It was like, oh, my God. We all locked up in our homes because we didn't want our skin to fall off our bones and in Ebola, you know. And then that didn't happen. And you're scared, you're alone, you're demoralized, you're without hope. And then it's like, oh, we're all in it together. And you got the dancing nurses, and you've got the essential workers, and that they broke us down and they built us up community, and we need to get away from that because that is not true community. That is exactly how every dictator has taken over populations. They demoralize them, they starve them to death, and they give them here the savior, the great Stalin, the great Hitler, the great Mussolini. And then Mao. And now Homeland Security. The Homeland, for the Homeland. I saw a dark journalist, Daniel List, was doing a great symposium on that, and how that phrase, the Homeland, has taken over every political speech from all of these people in this administration. That it's like, are you referring to the United States of America? Is that what you're talking about? Or the Homeland? The Homeland, where there is no Constitution. Where, you know, there's the threat to the homeland. And every American citizen that believes in the Constitution is now a threat to the homeland. That's very, like, a page right out of history. And it's not a good history story.
No.
And we're letting that, you know, we need to be aware that that's wrong. And to be able to point that out and say the emperor has no clothes, you're a rock star for standing up and saying that. And
yeah.
have the courage to, you know what I'm saying? We got to break from the crowd, the groupthink. And then that's the only way we do win. When you say, you know, God wins, only if we're on the right team, if we're
mm-hmm.
practicing, you know, otherwise you're going to lose with the rest of your those who didn't get into the ark, they drowned, and some of them didn't. But you need to, you know, be aware of what it takes to be a winner, and then you can win. And it's so hard to sift through this ocean of propaganda.
Totally.
Getting away from it and getting, you know, whatever your, like here, my weather is scaring me to death because still – I know there's fire, and they're still saying that there's fires. I'm like, oh, aren't these fires out yet? Because isn't this maybe rain clouds I'm seeing? No, it's still heavy smoke, and it rained, and it's cold. It's 30 degrees tonight. 30 degrees.
Oh, my God.
Today. My God is right, and I'm like, you're killing me, guys. What are you doing? Did the poles shift? My weather's, you know, is it the end of the world? What are you guys doing here? And it's like, okay, it's coming out of the north. Along with the fires that they've started, what else are they fucking doing to us? So this is like the weirdest summer for the Midwest, and it's not just the Midwest; it's the whole country.
It's the whole country.
So they're changing our climate, and this is when we're supposed to be growing our food. And generally, you know, people, it's a rare breed of person that gets up and does yard work and gardens. And, like, I'm like, no, I'd have to have servants and people to grow things for me if I was going to get into this. Because it's cold and yucky and rainy and whatever. But I think the actual – everything is flourishing. So this is a great growing season for us. But those are the things you need to focus on is you know, trying to create your own little paradise. Speaking of that, I would love to get Jim Gale on the show. He's reaching out to everybody to get his message out. And I know there's a little competition between him and or between us. And there's another show, and I don't want to butcher it. We both reached out on his feed, and we're both on the same on Freedomizer to showcase his permaculture farm that he's got going in Florida.
Well, it wouldn't be Freedomizer. I'm the only Freedomizer show on it from 3 to 6 Pacific.
No, this is not, she's on Freedomizer. And Point? Is it called Point? I'd have to look
it
up. I can find it. Anyway, she welcomed him to come on. And I was like, yeah. And I gave him our phone number and our time. And he asked every Sunday. I said, yes, every Sunday. And he is doing something so simple, but only because he's in Florida. And this is like hinges upon whether or not he gets hit by a hurricane, you know, and his whole town gets wiped out.
Right.
But right now he's doing it. And that's the thing. It's like, you know what? You can only do the best you can without, you know, say, hopefully it's going to be a good season and everything can grow. But he's got banana trees. He's got papaya trees. He's got, you know, he doesn't ever have to go to the grocery store, and he's right by the ocean and he fishes. And he did this on, I don't know how many acres of land, not that many. But he took it from sand to Eden. And this is his agricultural,
awesome.
How to landscape your home and your land into a self-sustaining farm, depending on your climate. And Florida does really well. And I'm like, boom, yes, this is what we all should be doing. And I think he actually wants to take his format and get into an entrepreneurial type of a program, like because I haven't talked to him, but form a company that will go out and help you to do exactly what he did and actually do the landscaping, the work that needs to be done, and boom, you've got your own little garden of Eden growing on your 1.5 acres of land wherever you're at. And I'm like, this, and that's how we win. That's how we win. It's like, you know what? Do what you want. I'm, you know, stay out of my yard. Get back to how America used to be and know that we do have a constitution.
Victory gardens, all of it.
Seriously. And there is, I mean, did they stop making trespassing signs and private property signs? Is that not a thing anymore?
No, they still make them.
When I was young, that was a real big thing because it was like, this is my property. You stay off it. And if we could get back to that, I think whatever goes on in the news and whatever crazy thing you want to do, you go ahead and do it. I'm doing my thing. And it's – does it sound selfish? Is it a selfish concept?
Yes and no.
As I'm saying it, it sounds awful. It does because they've conditioned us to be in this politically correct bubble of – you know, all inclusive,
well, but,
everything,
but
blah, blah, blah.
But then again, on the other hand, you've got people who would come in. Okay, so gleaning is a thing in the Bible, right? So that I think we've talked about this before, but let me just give the definition. But gleaning means if you've got an orange grove and a storm comes through and knocks a bunch of oranges onto the ground. Biblically, the farmer can't pick up that fruit and sell it. It has to be left there on the ground for poor people to come and eat it.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. In our society, that's not how it works. Like, in our society, we've got people who would go into that land, you know, and steal things that were not deemed gleaning. So I get you, yes and no, like the trespassing, but, like, you know, that's for, I guess, another day.
It's tempered with compassion, and let's not be an asshole. Let's make that our theme. Let's not be an asshole, you know?
Yeah.
And it is. It's kind of like, hey, are you hungry enough to want to come steal my food? let me feed you.
Be a right.
Good person, you know, it's not the, don't get your, like I have, I live next to one who's got, you know, this is my yard. Well, God bless you.
Get off my lawn.
Yard. Exactly. But, you know, nothing grows in your yard because there's no love anywhere.
Right.
Just, you know, go live your miserable life. And it's not that. It's more of boundaries, healthy boundaries. It's almost like we almost have to reteach the whole world what healthy boundaries and limitations and what's, you know, personal. I almost want to say, it's not preference, personal choice. Whatever is a good fit for you, that's you, you know.
Yeah.
You do you, I do me. And you don't need to, you know, it's kind of like we used to gravitate towards people that we enjoyed being around. And generally, they were kind of, we all were the same, I think. I don't think there was too many different, you know, we all kind of were nice and easygoing and fun. And here's a story of when, back in the day, in the 80s, 70s actually, when we would all kind of sit around and nobody was killing each other for their drugs or selling drugs. And we didn't have guns. We just all had rock and roll and a lot of drugs. And underage drinkers. And magically everything was there for all these 14-year-olds. It was amazing. But it was rock and roll and fun. And we always, it was like, you know, good people gravitated towards each other. And then there was like, this asshole would pop in. I was like, my God, what the hell's wrong with him? He's a cokehead. I was like, oh, well, he's an asshole, too. He's all stressed out and that, you know. And it's like, nobody wanted to be around him because energy was really bad. And it kind of was like, now that I look back on it, it's like, almost like a demon possession. It's like that kind of a drug really affects a human being to a bad place as opposed to, you know, the nectar of the gods, the beer and the, you know, marijuana. And we never did any hard drugs, but you could see how different that was. And you've got kind of that kind of manic personalities that are all over the place where they're just not enjoying. They're not hanging out and enjoying the backyard and the fire and your neighbors coming over. Do you have that where you're at? I don't have it. But I used to have it when we were younger. And in certain areas, I think out in the country, my family, I was like, oh, my God. When I come over, all the neighbors come. They all came over to meet me. And then we lit the fire and we hit. And it was like, oh, I go, oh, I want to live here. And that's how I grew up, out in the country like that. And for something of like some kind of disconnect of we just don't have enough in common, there's too much diversity to where you're not really hanging out with your neighbors for whatever the reason being. And you're just in your little yard by yourself. That's not a good, healthy way to live.
In your little box.
Exactly. Your little prison yard, pretty much. You know how they
can little boxes.
And we need to open up. I mean, since we're not actually locked in a prison, and they say it's a free-range prison, make it a fun time, you know? And that'll make them crazy. How are they going to control us if we're not following the program of fear? Fear and craziness. That's right. Mm-hmm. You know, back to this, you know, masking. I've got them driving by themselves with their windows down with masks right now. And it's just like,
I know, it's terrible.
They're a mess. And it's like, some crazy people. It's like, think, okay, there's you cannot have a conversation. They're insane. They're living in their own little insane, God knows what's going through their mind. It's like, let them be. Like a wild animal with rabies. Leave them be.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I don't know. And, because there's no, I went to go get my physical and I was dreading it. I'm like, oh my God, am I going to, you know, lose my mind? Is it going to make me wear a mask? Am I going to throw away my entire pension over my conviction and my little temper tantrum?
Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have to like, have a physical for your job?
I do. Every year I have to go into the medical mafia building, the shrine, you know, the Vatican of the fucking Holy Grail of the doctors. I don't go to doctors. I hate hospitals. I hate the whole aesthetic, everything of it. I don't like it. And it was like, it was a real downer going on. And thankfully, there was those signs saying masks. I'm like, thank God, because that was the last, you know, you're dealing with the tyrants. The tyrants, I think, I'm just going to continue doing this because if I take this away, I can't control you. So we've got our school districts that get the big federal money. They still have a protocol. I'm like, you know how against the law this is. You can't, like, they can't make us get tested if you're not vaccinated, but somehow magically people are going to be tested. And if you're positive, you have to be self-quarantined for 5 days and wear a mask for 5 days coming back to work. And I'm like, how is that? How are you going to enforce that? Where's our rules? But they still had to put it out there. It's kind of like, fuck, we're done with this. Did you not hear we're done with this? It's over. Even the government said it's over, but not the district.
But then again, we've got the White House saying, because, and they will, they are trying to make the unvaccinated second-class citizens. They've been trying to do it from the beginning, and that's what the White House mandate is all about, is that it's not for everybody. Not everybody has to wear masks. Only the unvaccinated, which doesn't make a lick of sense to me, because if you're vaccinated, aren't you protected? Isn't that what they say? Safe and effective? You know, why do unvaccinated people have to wear masks? If you're that worried, why don't you wear a mask? I'm not trying to advocate for that, but
you're
vaccinated.
Schindler's List, where they had to wear the gold stars, honey? This is exactly how the movie went. It took years. It was years. That's
as Brother Ty says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does time.
We're following the same playbook from Nazi Germany in the 30s, and it's just taking a really long time, and we're getting tired of it, and we're not really paying attention because there's so much blah, 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 and we're just like, oh, fuck, I'm done. But if you really look back, it's what they've been doing for the last, I don't know, 23 years. It is awful lot like Nazi Germany and the taking away of a constitution and demoralizing the population and segregating and getting them to hate each other and then to hate a certain special class of people. And now it's been justified that they need to be separated. They're filthy. They're dirty. That's what they did. And we're still
separate,
on this.
But equal.
It's a long movie.
That's where we're going to go next.
A very long movie. Exactly. And I'm like, holy cow. Can we get some new writers? Are you going to forever be on strike? We want new script writers. Something new, please. But no, they go right back to the same old book, which is crazy. It really, really
which
is.
Which is, I don't know if you heard me before, but, you know, history does not repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme.
It's got a side B too, though.
Oh my God!
Flip it up.
People younger than millennial will not understand what you just said.
I know. Although vinyl, you know, it's got a good beat, but you can't dance it. I give it a five. See,
oh my God!
The vinyls are coming back. I am so glad that some things just were so good. And they're going to not ever go away. Just like, what's his face? Oh, I liked him. So, oh, gosh. Lauren, the timeless classic.
Give me a genre.
Lauren.
Give me a time. Give me.
He was in the 80s and the 90s. He was the fantastic clothes designer, Lauren. Good looking guy.
Ralph?
Anyways, his stuff. Ralph Lauren, he had the classic.
That was the easy one.
That's timeless. Those are timeless classic.
Polo.
Lauren Bacall and Katherine Hepburn, they dress like that. These are timeless classic styles that just look good no matter what.
Timeless. You're right. Cable knit, polo.
Yeah.
But that's also, but that's also clubs, right? That's also the rich people, the connected people. These are yacht clubs. These are polo clubs,
mm-hmm.
you know, country mm-hmm. clubs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You have to pay money, you know. And actually, like, as much as I kind of despise certain yacht clubs or certain clubs, the concept of it is actually pretty genius. And rich people don't spend money that they don't have to, right? And so really, like, let's just take yacht clubs, for instance, but all clubs kind of follow the same, protocol. But so yacht clubs, they've got their boats, and we all know that boats are very expensive to maintain, right? People come together, they give some money up front, you know, a very small amount in comparison, and they have reduced slip fees. Like, so say, for instance, like back when I was first getting into the yacht club scene because of my husband, I know that the normal slip rent in San Diego in Shelter Island Basin was like, you know, for a public marina was like $12 a foot on the low end, $12 per foot. Mm-hmm. So when you're, especially when you're talking about the mega yachts, you know, you do the math, you know, 100 feet, $12 times 100 feet. Then we've got, down to the 25-foot sailboats, and they pay their $12 a month per foot. That was in a public marina. Now, in a yacht club, and a yacht club that we were members of, it was Silvergate Yacht Club. They kicked us out for bullshit reasons because they're old, you know. Anyway, not even legitimate reasons, but, like, I digress. But it was $4 a foot there. Versus 12.
And look where you are now.
So, oh, totally. These people are going to be groveling. You just wait. Oh, you want to slip some harbor?
You can smile.
We're all full.
Smile,
you know.
Exactly. Smile and laugh at them someday. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I would like them to make us honorary members. To be perfectly honest, I would like we'll be a member of your club. We won't pay any of the dues because we already did. And we get right back on the, you know, we'll do that. And they, you know, we never pay dues. That would be okay. I would accept that. My husband and I were just talking about this last night. I digress again. But what I'm saying is, at this time, it was $4 per foot versus $12 a foot. If you're at a yacht club, then you go up to use the facilities, and depending on the yacht club, they're, you know, world class, down to, you know, what they call a paper club, where it's just basically a dock, and you're, you know, you pay your $12 a year, and you're a member of a club. This is how it works. Now, here's the really important thing, is that it's now $4 a foot for your boat. Then when you leave, also the facilities are good, and then, you know, you get a $3 beer versus a $12 beer out in the public, right? So you subsidize, you know, for the restaurant that happens to be there or the slips. Then here's the really great part, is that you get reciprocal privileges depending on the yacht club. So say San Diego Yacht Club is a world-class yacht club, right? So you can take your boat and you can sail anywhere in the world that has a yacht club, and you can typically, like members of San Diego, would be able to take their boat and pull it up to their dock for 3-4 days, depending on what the port captain has, for free, and use their facilities anywhere in the world, you know? And so if you really are into boating, like, it makes a lot of sense that yacht clubs actually save people money. It makes it so that you can take your boat and save money where you go. It's actually a really good idea, you know? I don't know why I brought this up. We were talking polo,
We're talking about, you know, the classics and how timeless things that were good, they come back. Mm-hmm. They never die out because it was a good idea. Now, in the 30s and the 40s, I have memoirs from my grandfather. He wrote a diary, but it was kind of it was catched here and there throughout the years. And they always had a group. It was a club. Everybody had a club. And even on my other side of the family, both sets of grandparents, they have what they called the club. And they would do the same thing. And these were like, on one side was poor farmers, and the other side was, everyone was poor. Everyone was poor because it was during the Depression, right?
Yeah, gotcha.
On the other side, they were business people, right? Business people and doctors, but still poor.
Yeah.
They had clubs. And that's what they would do. They would do a collection, and they'd go to whoever's house and, you know, bring pot, it was called potluck, right? And who brought what, and they, you know, pretend they had something important to do and take minutes and whatever, but basically drink, play cards, and play music. And that was going out. And it was every month they held it. It was at somebody else's house. But they would collect for the next little party. And it is kind of what kind of bonds communities, and not even communities, but people. That's how you get your friends.
Yes.
Or your four
people
five
of couples. Similar interest.
And exactly. And then you've got a yacht club. Well, hey, when you're boating, isn't that the most scary, loneliest thing in the world to do, is go on a boat by yourself? But when you've got
right?
a bunch of buddies, you know, and then it's kind of like, I want to be a pirate.
Of course, yeah.
Me. And it's kind of like, you know, kind of cool. I saw a bunch of guys, and they called them, I think they called them golf rats. But they had houseboats in Key West, and they were all at the dock. And I walked by the dock.
And they called them golf rats?
Golf rats, because they reminded me, they were small houseboats, and they almost reminded me of the 1980s, 70s vans. They had vans that had, you know, covered in shag carpeting, and it had a couch in there, and it's kind of like a
hippies, alternative living, folks.
Exactly, but on a boat. And I'm like, look at, and it's kind of, that's what they did. Is they sailed the Gulf of Mexico. And they
the
go
Gulf
from port
of
to
Mexico.
Port.
Okay, all right. Because
yeah.
I was going to say, forgive me, I'm trying to think of where the geography of where you're talking about was. So
it's
golf,
sorry,
I was like, are they also members of golf clubs? You know, so
I don't know. They certainly probably were rock stars, and you know.
No, I'm thinking it's probably because it was the Gulf of Mexico. So, but that Joe, it's interesting, and I don't mean to keep talking about him, but like he was
no
kind
worries.
Of my passport into this boating kind of world, and so I bring up San Diego Yacht Club, which I've got zero quarrels with. It's a world-class yacht club. They're amazing. You know, a truly like, we're going to join a yacht club again one day. We're a member of one other one, which I'll get to, but it will be San Diego Yacht Club, and we'll get in very easily. Because you also have to have membership, you know, like people sponsor you from San Diego Yacht Club. But Joe was the master of San Diego Yacht Club for 10 years. So we've got Commodores, we've got all kinds of support to get us into this club. We could, you know, it's just coming up with a little amount of money, a couple thousand dollars.
You know, this is so cool because, you know, this is what life is about.
Yeah, right?
Enjoying. And there's, I think when you are on social media or turn on any type of entertainment, you're getting a skewed view of what reality is. But this is what is going on in the world, is people are enjoying the ocean. And there's a whole environment of people who own boats and are enjoying the sea. And
well, what
there's
I'm
nothing
saying is
wrong
that
with that.
Truly
so
world-class
cool.
people join a few yacht clubs, San Diego Yacht Club being one of them. You know, there's another one, Southwest Yacht Club, that's also a world-class kind of yacht club. They've got a little bit of a different theme. Like it seems like they cater more to animals, like dogs and children. Not that San Diego Yacht Club doesn't cater to children, but however, there's also, I mean, in San Diego, I mean, I can probably count like probably seven yacht clubs. Let me think. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, at least 7 or 8 yacht clubs, you know, big yacht clubs, not big yacht clubs, but yacht clubs in San Diego. Joe was actually a Commodore in charge of a yacht club called Point Loma Yacht Club. And we're still current day members, also an awesome yacht club, but a totally different feel. When we first, you know, when I was first introduced to Point Loma Yacht Club, it was, you know, a little room. And access to the pool. And that was it. That was the whole operation. We had final Friday happy hours. We did some Sunday, you know, barbecues by the pools. We did some races, right? Sail races around San Diego. Of course, like main things like opening day ceremonies and Commodore's balls and things like that we had to plan. Now that yacht club, Point Loma Yacht Club, is like kind of bare minimum. Like it's just a group of people, like, you know, scouting, I don't want to say scallywags, but like people who, you know, only want to spend $50 a month versus, you know, $300 a month to be a member of a yacht club, uh-huh. right? Now, Point Loma Yacht Club may not have reciprocals everywhere in the world like San Diego Yacht Club does, but many places in the world, you know, like I could have, I'm really sad. When I went to Maui, there is a yacht club, I think it's the Lahaina Yacht Club. And I completely forgot it was there, and I went with another friend, Jesse Meemer, and I'm still sad because we just went to like Bubba Gum Shrimp Company. You know what I mean? Like some like TGI Fridays kind of restaurant, which was fine, but we could have been like sitting on a private beach in Lahaina and you know, talking to people that not only the kind of people that I know,
right.
but some of the exact same people. Right. Oh, I remember Kristen. She came here and we had such a great time. You know what I mean? You know, I'm kind of rambling a little bit, but like there are different kinds of levels of yacht clubs. And you know, there's also like, I think it's called Navy Yacht Club, which is in North County, and on Camp Pendleton. And it's just like a trailer. Right. And we would all get together and celebrate their opening day, just like they would come down to Point Loma Yacht Club or San Diego Yacht Club and, you know, celebrate our opening days. Right. So I guess what I'm saying is it's a great boating community with a couple people that are, well, assholes, you know, like there are some places that are. You know, they don't want to see outsiders come in, you know?
There are those assholes everywhere. We have to learn how to maneuver around them and not let them steal our thunder because they're everywhere. I don't know how it is, but it's almost like Johnny Appleseed dropped off lots and lots of seeds, and every nine seeds, there's an asshole seed.
That's true. And by the way, I'm not talking about assholes at San Diego Yacht Club or Southwest Yacht Club. You know, limited assholes in Point Loma Yacht Club, even, which is like the least expensive yacht club. But there's one yacht club in San Diego. They're just like there's a lot of assholes. I'll give details at some point. But they kicked us out for, you know, me and Joe and the kids. Living on a 27-foot and a dog, they said we lived on a 27-foot sailboat, and there's no way that we lived on it, you know. And we gave them proof and all that stuff, but they're like, no, you can never come back, never.
You can't camp on our harbor. That's so funny. You know, we've got similar type of things in the Midwest because in Illinois, there's nothing but farmers. And then suddenly they came up with malls and then water parks. But before that, there was nothing. And they had the similar kind of clubs. So it would be like a fishing. We'd have to drive through cornfields for hours to the Moose Heart, where there'd be a pond, and they'd join the club, and you'd rent.
Yeah.
Because you paid. You'd go for a fish fry, right, on Friday.
Yep.
And then, you know, the next day you could go fishing and then go on a boat. It was a little boat. And go fishing. And that was what was considered like belonging to a club and having fun. And, you know, there's just all kinds
of,
you know, depending on where you are, how many cool things there are to do.
Yeah.
I love
RV clubs like Moose Lodge and, you know, like there's a lot. It depends on what kind of activity it is.
They haven't explored them yet. But the Great Gatsby kind of way of life, I think there's enough. I love it. I love that it's alive and well. I used to be in the hotels, in the fine dining, and that was my thing. And then our society took a dive into shorts, bare feet, and flip-flops, and no manners, and little
personal pan. Sorry, that's basically San Diego.
Pizza. And then, but everywhere, it's kind of like nobody wanted, they wanted sport bars. And it was like, no. And they took away the beautiful, you know, wood, English pub style. It's like they went American. We used to call it Euro trash, but now it's like, it's just for American culture. It's just Chili's and Applebee's type of corporate fast food, basically.
Please
and
tell me that you've seen Idiocracy since the last time we talked about it.
I haven't, Dave. I'm reading the Book of Enoch. I'm going way back, because it's amazing how lost into stupid we are, and you got to go way back into. You know, if you love me, you'll get me a map of the ancient world, because I'm reading this book, and the only country that's still here is Libya. And all these other countries, I'm like, I don't know where they are in the rise and fall of all the empires and the cool things, the political mischievousness. And, you know, forget about the Helen of Troy and the horse that they put it, you know, all the soldiers in. They would, like, disguise themselves as women and, yes, come sleep with us. And then they'd slice their throats and they took over a kingdom. Just amazing. And it's the rise and fall of rulers and tyrants. And what we have going on is nothing new. It's comical cartoon world compared to, boom, history. So I'm into history right now. So as far as anything
I was either going to talk about Idiocracy and the fact that, you know, of the rise of these Chili's, Fuddruckers, you know, in the year 2020, you know, 2100,
yes,
it turns into, you know, butt fuckers and, you know, like Starbucks
because
is a place to get hand jobs.
That stole any hope of having culture from Americans.
Yeah. Please watch Idiocracy. However, the other topic I wanted to talk to you about was aliens. And
with what?
Was aliens.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
Well, because Enoch.
The old books? Enoch, yes. You know, this is real history.
Let's elaborate. I know that, like, because I feel like we're, like, connecting on, like, we've researched this kind of level, and we're kind of like, but let's kind of lay, could you lay it out for people?
I will.
You know,
so
especially
the,
Christians, because remember, Christians talk about, never mind, you lay it out. Aliens.
Okay, so I'm going to butcher the name of the country, but you had the Assyrians, you had the Sumerians, Babylonian. It might be the Babylonian creation theory that speaks about the war in the heavens and the actual planets that were named, that were, and I've had other people tell me, well, the planets were gods. And you got the Titans, if you go into Greek history, the Titans and Hermes and Zeus, these were all gods, but they were planets at one time. So the Babylonian creation
and constellation
theory speaks of the war in the heaven. There was a war in the heaven. The gods came down to the earth. It kind of mimics the creation. It doesn't discredit the creation theory in the Bible.
Right.
Actually, talks a
just
little
like
bit
the Bible
of,
doesn't discredit evolution.
We'll have to get it. It talks about everyone after its own kind. The theory of evolution is that, and it's still a theory. Now it's evolution is still a theory, Darwin's theory of evolution. But they changed that because now it's a fact because of different animals he found on a little island, the Galapagos. He didn't find a new animal. There's still funny-looking turtles.
Adam and Eve were not the first people on the planet. We know that, right?
Well, if you only read the Bible, you wouldn't. But if you read some older books, and
no,
these are
even if you read
not
it.
Just books, these are tablets. These were stories written in stone, an old language, which outdates, is earlier than the Bible. and
sure,
talks about the same things, that the Bible speaks about, which is God's come to earth, God's made man in their image, and then the gods left and would be coming back again. And
okay,
so
what part of that invalidates evolution? Like, legit question.
Well, evolution talks about, in the theory, is like from a quagmire, things slowly evolved into an amazing creation. And they use the island, the Galapagos Island, as having different types of birds, not different types, but different colors, nonetheless in the birds. So because there was a different, they look different than what we had over here in Australia. So therefore, they must have looked like the Australian bird, but since they lived way over here, they changed into a different bird over time.
Understood.
That's the theory of evolution. But they're still a bird. So I don't give a lot of credibility to the theory of evolution, just as the germ theory and all. You know, it's kind of like you can entertain what you think to be true. I'll stick with facts and what I know to be true. And
okay,
if your theory doesn't really hold water,
yeah,
I don't give it a lot of credit.
But what I know to be true when I read the Bible, you know, because I think there's a lot of people, you know, if you just read the Bible, you will not understand this, this, and this. But really what I think you're trying to say is that if you only go to church every Sunday and listen to what the pastor says about the Bible and not actually read the Bible, then you'll believe this way. But honestly, like when you look at Adam and Eve, right? Adam and Eve were not the first two humans. They were, I believe, in my opinion, the Bible says they were the first to understand certain consciousnesses about basically God's will, understand what, you know, what God wanted.
Bible,
but wait, I'm not done.
I don't know, babe.
Because they got kicked out of the, they got kicked out of the garden. They had, you know, sons, right? When they left, they had procreated. They were sons, correct? Then they got kicked out of the garden. Those sons married women. So where did those women come from? So that, to me, right there is very, very basic, you know, logic that there were other humans around at the time, and Adam and Eve certainly were not the first two.
If you go back into like this, what am I reading? The Hermetics. It was not unheard of for men to sleep with their daughters and for women to sleep with their sons.
But they didn't have any daughters. They had three sons. And those sons married women.
Listen, I know, but their mother slept. See, this is where you go into that God forbid you talk about incest, because if...
I'm not talking about incest. What I'm telling you is that when they were kicked out of the Garden of Eden, Cain and Abel and the other one that I can never remember.
What if Seth?
What?
Seth is his name. Seth.
Thank you. So Cain, Abel, and Seth
Married
women. They were named in the Bible. The women that they married were named in the Bible. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, unless you're saying that they just made up three different names for the mother.
Their sisters. They're sisters. They married their sisters. If they just continued to procreate, I mean, that's just how it went. They had like 15 wives. My father came from 11 kids. Boom. That's almost like a weird type of argument to have for this. Let's go back to, because you read the Bible, it talks in very simple terms. God created the earth, created the oceans and light, and then man, and blah, 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 blah. It doesn't talk about aliens. But if you go back to earlier writings, it speaks about the gods came from the planets and came to the earth and created man and then left and would come back. So that would be a definition of an alien in our terms of extraterrestrial life.
What about angels?
Don't want to give gods, they don't want to talk about those. They don't want to talk. That's a, that would be like an extraterrestrial being, because they don't come from this earth. They come from somewhere else, and it's a different realm.
Right.
I think they want to demystify the whole other world of what we can't see and what we, like right now with the geoengineering, they want to hide all this from it. There's no way you could look at the fucking sky and see, and they use it as an adjective, as a emphatic adjective, because they've taken my sky away from me. The night sky is gone. So you can't see the stars and the constellations and the magic that is up there, let alone Starlink. That was the last thing I think I saw that was amazing was Starlink. And I'm like, oh my God, look what they did. And they put these false satellites all over the earth. And now anything you look at, it's like you can't they've ruined the sky because it's not a natural phenomenon. It's not an astrological.
They definitely ruined the sky.
Thing.
But if you go back to biblical,
it's a satellite,
term,
right?
So, but if you go back to biblical, but if you go back to biblical stories, like look at Abraham. Abraham didn't read in the Bible he was going to be the father of many nations. He read it in the stars. And Lot. Lot didn't, have angels came down and told Lot that, Sodom and Gomorrah, it was a bad city. It was there was too much sin going on in the city. And Lot said to these angels, well, you know what, actually to God. And then later on, these angels came to him in his house and said, you need to leave. And the angels were, guests of, that's the covenant of the mantle in the Bible. But the angels were guests of Lot. And an angry mob comes out and says, send out these men so we can know them, meaning rape them. And Lot sends out his daughters instead. And, of course, the daughters were not accepted. Right, but where did these angels
come
from?
They wanted them good-looking men. Exactly.
Yeah, but
from
where did the angels come from? From the heavens.
From the heavens.
Aren't they aliens?
Well, you know what? We've created. So, okay, an alien. Okay, when you say alien, they've created so many Hollywood-style movies where aliens are like, that thing that comes out of the chest of.
Excellent point.
They've demonized that word. So when you tell me that word, I think of that and I'm like, no. But alien means actually not from here. They are not from here.
Right.
They're not from this land.
Exactly.
Okay?
And
so,
whether they're fallen, people keep talking about fallen angels being aliens. It's like, well, what about the other angels? Where did they, where did they come from? How did Abraham know he was going to be the father of many nations? Can we even talk about the fact that the book of Enoch is actually in the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it bugs me when Christians say they don't believe in aliens, or Operation Bluebeam and all of these things.
Why?
And we can talk about the PSYOP that's coming.
But do you know why?
That's in the Bible, too, I think. What?
It is? Well... Yes, it is. And I'll have to look that up because it is, there'll be many, many signs in the sky. I'm going to paraphrase.
Yes.
There'll be signs in the sky of deception. The times will be so bad that women will even give up their children. Well, we're seeing that now. We're fighting over the right to give up our
the
children.
One that, the
then,
most prominent one that I remember is that Christians will want to live under a rock.
Yeah. And it's a kind of, the end times have been going on for quite a long time.
Absolutely.
Depending on who you talk to. And depending on, just like if we hadn't talked about, the rise of the Great Gatsby lifestyle, that I'm like, yes, there's still culture in this world, even in California. You've got yacht clubs. And I'm like, that was the pinnacle of the good life. And even poor people have a good set of clothes. They would get dressed up on Sunday and go to church to go in out clothes. And that you always, you cleaned up really good and you had a lot of fun. And then, you know, it makes you feel good to have it. But if you talk to other people, it's like doom, gloom, it's the end of the world, the end of civilization. If you watch too much TV, it probably is.
Right.
But even if you listen to the wrong people, they're going to tell you what they think about the Bible. You need to read the Bible, and then you tell me what it said to you. And then there are other books. There are other books, and I'm doing audiobooks right now. I found it so fascinating. I think I'm on the fourth chapter of the Book of Enoch, that they talk about the creation of the universe and how God created the universe and set the moon and the sun where it was. And even it describes a flat earth. And I'm like, oh, is this not fucking interesting? I'm not going to go into the whole, because people get crazy on certain things like this. But it's old cuneiform tablet that was found in the desert that talks about this. This is the Babylonian
creation.
That's why
I like to say the earth is oblong. It's not flat or round. Just stop. You know what I mean? Like, who cares?
Yeah.
I get called a flat earther for things that I have never put out a formal opinion in public about my the shape of the earth. Go fuck yourself. I'm sorry.
Isn't
I know.
Isn't that funny? Don't you know why that's now – okay, why did that enter the land of – that's a hot topic. You don't want to offend anybody more than, like, you know, their sex life is the flat earth. I think because here, there's so many secrets in the Book of Enoch, and that's exactly why it was taken out of the canon, put into a book in the Vatican, and it's on the do not read list, is because it has all these old truths that they don't want anyone to know about, because it's going to blow their alibi for where they've been out all night doing it. They're not cheating on you. This is what they want you to believe over here, not that. So now it is important. Apparently it is important why and the earth is a certain shape, because it lines up with all these other truths of how the gods created the universe and how the universe was not just the earth, but the planets, the one that's not here anymore, the one that's still orbiting the asteroid belt that was a planet that was destroyed but still orbits like a planet.
So what you're saying, basically, if I might interrupt.
History, they're hiding. Oh, sure.
Is that we were given the wrong dimensions on purpose so that we couldn't do the math for ourselves when it comes to the planet and alignment and things like that.
Well, that is a very good point, too. But also the fact that if you believe the earth is flat, then you'll also believe that there were gods that came to the earth, like giants and fairies and trolls that live under the bridge, and all these other myths that used to be accounts of what actually happened. It was known as history.
Right.
And you'll believe the old history, which would be the key to your past. And you're not supposed to know that because we hold your future.
Right.
Holding,
but they have to tell us a little
book.
Bit, right? I think that's why they have to tell us, teach us. Even now, like in the very indoctrinated schools that our children go to, they learn about Egypt. And they don't learn the truth about Egypt, but there's a reason that, like, the pyramids are like wonders of the world. They have to tell us, at least on a basic level, what's going on. You know, like they have to show us the towers falling. They don't have to tell us about the technology behind these things, though.
I don't, you know, I'm going to disagree with you because I don't think they have to do anything. They like
no, they have to play by their own rules. They set up rules for themselves. These people, I mean, if you really study the people that are trying to control us and that do control us at the moment, they lay out rules for themselves. And one of those rules is that they have to tell us what they're doing. They have to.
Now, I'm interested in this. Where did you find this, and why do you think there are people that are controlling us?
Okay,
I
say people very loosely. You're right. My definition of what they are, they're probably more reptilian, you know. But exactly. You're right about that. The people that control us.
I'm going to go demonic.
Yeah.
You know, demonic
and fallen angels. Fallen from where?
Fallen
aliens.
Angels. Fallen angels were the gods. And now they're out of, you know, their mission is to take us out with them, basically. This is a continuation
of
the
war.
I think they're going to win. They do think, they know they won't. Like even in the Bible, I've been reading, I think it was the book of Mark I read. And I like the way he writes because very to the point. And he doesn't he won't go into detail at all. So it's almost like you need to have read the book before you see the movie to read his book. but he has so many instances, seriously, so many to know what's going on.
I agree.
So many instances where Jesus was casting the demons out of these sick people, and the demons would always know who he was, and Jesus had to make them not say what they want, call him the Son of God. He wanted them to be quiet. Because he always wanted to do everything in quiet, don't talk about it, which was the exact opposite. It was like, my God, he brought this one from the dead and cured this one. But when he casted the demons would never not call him who he was. So they can't lie. And, you know, they if they were true demons like they are now, working, operating the way they are now in full deception, they would have, you know, chastised him and say, who do you think you are? You're nobody, you know? But they knew who whose presence they were in. So
yeah,
that's the only knowledge I know of what they are able and how they operate. This other Illuminati, this is what I'm thinking you're alluding to, is the Illuminati have to tell us. They have this, like vampires, the tale of the vampires. They can't come into your house unless you invite them in, you know, that old thing, which kind of goes in the land of voodoo. You know, when they put that red clay in front of their door and the salt that keeps evil demons cannot enter your house because you put a protection.
Burning sage, putting lamb's blood around your door.
Seriously, but I've had people actually look down and not want to come in my house. And I've always found that odd, but I'm like, they were evil and they can't come in. That's what I thought about after the fact, after knowing how these things work. And it's like, it's interesting. It is very interesting. It's very real. I believe totally in the land of, you know, the afterlife. I mean, but there's a lot of stuff going on that we can't see. And that would be the land of aliens and the land of the gods and what's not in our dimension, so to speak.
Yeah. So let me just say that first, if the Bible verse, if any man glories, let him glory in this, that he knows and understands the word of God. And when you were talking about Jesus healing the sick, that is a spiritual gift that is endowed on Christians, right? And some other religions as well. Enoch was not a Christian. I understand that, but he had, you know, knowledge, ancient knowledge and ancient gifts, I believe, that Christians also have access to. Starting with the beginning, it's like a ladder rung when you first connect with, you know, with the Holy Spirit. You know, there's you know, speaking in tongues, interpretation of tongues, prophecies, word of knowledge, word of wisdom, discerning of spirits, faith, healing, and miracles. And when you – and so each ladder rung is harder and harder to do in this life, right? And so when you get up to the point of healing, when you're, you know, healing the sick, the reason that that's all the way up – healing, you know, it mm-hmm. is because it requires two people. Healing requires the understanding and the belief of the healer and the person that's being healed, right? So that's
okay. Now that's I agree with you. I'm like, I don't know, but you're absolutely right because kinesiology works that way. Muscle testing.
Yeah, and we're talking about Jesus. We're talking about the Gospels, right? So you know, and that's why I agree with you that Mark is such an important book, because it shows not only the faith of the healer, but the person that's being healed as well. That's something, you know, that's why it's so hard to do. It's because it takes two. You know, faith, obviously, like walking on water is a big deal, right? That's something that Jesus had.
Yeah.
And he had faith that he could do it. And miracles is things like what Moses did, right? And he's not even a Christian. So, you know, he also had the Holy Spirit either put upon him or inside of him, I believe, and put upon him. And he was able to part the Red Sea. You know what I mean? Or be there at the right time for God to do his miracles.
You know, it's funny. These people were not Christians only because before Christ.
Exactly.
That's the only reason.
Yeah,
they
amen.
Were, they followed the true God. They were God's people, these men that were in the Bible. Most of them. And they also, like, you know, the Cyrus, you know, they Nebuchadnezzar. There were men who were in the Bible who were opponents of God in God's way, and they're put in the Bible for.
Yeah, what about Paul? Saul? You know?
Yeah,
that,
Paul.
I don't know. Yeah, that's a really important one, because this man, Saul, was a Pharisee. He was a Jewish high priest, you know, part of the class killed
God's people.
Yeah, and so he goes around he went around murdering Christians, Saul did, as a Pharisee. And then he was struck down on the road to Damascus, blind. Jesus came to him and said, I'm paraphrasing, but knock it off. And he was healed. He was cured of his blindness. And from then on, he was called Paul. And that's where most of the New Testament after Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John come from, is that Paul knew Lily, something like that, the seller of purple, who had a fleet of sailboats that went all over the Mediterranean, you know, the Colossians, the Thessalonians, but, you know, all of these, and spreading the word of Jesus.
In the book I'm reading, the Hermetics, you've got the Corinthians, the Ephesians, all of these.
Yes.
Yes, and these were all ancient empires.
Yes.
And they were actually, going back to the Babylonian evolution accounts, when the gods came to the earth, and they were basically stuck here. Maybe they weren't a sucker, but they were here, and it wasn't like, oh, they're on vacation. It took a long time to go back to their planet. So since they were here and achieved what they wanted, they weren't good to fight amongst themselves over the ego of who was the best and who was in charge. They spread out and had their own cities, and that's where all of these cities came from. And then the rulers were the interesting thing, was that there was only one instance where man was allowed to rule themselves. It only lasted 54 years. It didn't last that well. They always had the gods were the rulers, the pharaohs. They always had, you know, the, what did you call them? The Caesars, the Pharisees. These were like godlike. They were
the sovereign.
Yeah, they were put in as high a position because the gods would rule. And then after a while, the gods, they went back. They had been done with us. But they'll be coming back. But this, we are building upon old tradition almost, you know. And it's almost like, I guess for some, it's like they're ready for new things. We don't like the way things have been done. Okay, well, here, let's do it your way. And it's not working out that well. You know, we need to have some form of structure, some value system, some code, like the Hammurabi code, which goes back to Babylon. I believe it was Babylon. It's almost like the Ten Commandments. We base most of our laws off of this.
Yeah.
Now it's like,
again,
well, we don't want laws anymore, damn it.
Right.
Well, let's see how
again, history doesn't repeat itself, but it sure does rhyme.
It certainly does.
Yeah.
And
that,
if you,
you
can
know,
name that two and three, I can name that two and three notes. You know, Smoke on the Water, nope. Devil Went to Georgia, nope. You know, I don't know. Seriously,
all I'm saying
there
is there's, okay, let me just, because we're almost done.
Now,
we've
now
only got like a little less than 5 minutes.
Well, real quick, back to the aliens. I think that in view of the fact that they, no matter what, they do not want to put a spotlight on a creator or God.
Yeah.
They want to deflect that, and now it's the aliens. And here's the big, could it be, you know, mom's home, you guys got to get out because I'm going to get in trouble. You know, it's like all of a sudden they're back. Are they back? They've been here watching us.
They've been here the whole time.
They've been watching us for many, many, many eons. And for the government who's watching your every move and getting ready to throw you in jail are looking out for your best interests and want to protect you from the aliens while shutting down the churches and taking your Bible away. I would be very leery of this entire alien thing that they're pulling out of their hat right now. Personally,
I'm glad you brought that up.
But, so, thank you, and I'm glad this is a topic. I think we should. It's interesting that you know they're bringing this X-Files type of episode from Arizona with the 8-foot aliens on you know
and
not
in,
from this
yeah,
planet.
And in Vegas.
I'm like, really?
Yeah.
The same week that they're going to arrest. A former president who's actually is still he's the president. He won the election. He's been, you know, if you could have, you'd like to burn his house down, but you can't.
Okay, flat earther.
But it looks better to arrest him during a campaign. You know, he's going to run again, which, you know, you won the last time. You're going to win this time, but are they going to give it to you? We don't know. Let's watch the next episode of, you know, that's what's going on. But in the meantime, even only been screaming about Area 51 in Roswell, and you know they're like, oh, they're crazy people. Now
okay,
the
I only have
saying,
2.5 minutes
yeah,
left. You got half. Okay, I agree.
All right, I'm gonna let you
I
go.
Totally,
I
totally agree. No, you're fine. I love you, but I totally agree that there is this buildup in the media. In the Tucker Carlson's even, and I love Tucker Carlson. He's right for saying what he's saying about aliens, you know, and you know, national intelligence coming out and saying all of these things. I do believe that it's coming for a reason, but I also think that we need to understand, and especially Christians, which we just spent the last almost hour talking about, Christians having no real reasons why they should not believe in aliens. As a matter of fact, most of their book says aliens are real, and you know, talks about the heavens and talks about aliens and talks about Enoch, talks about Abraham's reading in the stars that he's going to be the father of many nations. All of these things, I believe, are
Jacob's ladder
of aliens.
Ladder.
Yeah, what's
Jacob's
that?
Ladder.
Yeah,
Jacob's ladder.
All of this.
Went up to the
all
ladder.
Of it.
And the angels.
So you
we
can
used to have,
all,
there was
you
a painting
believe.
in my grandmother's house. I mean, look at all the wonderful
exactly.
artwork.
So what I'm
of
so basically what I'm saying,
spaceships and angels that come up and down. Those
yeah.
could be angels. Could be aliens.
So basically, what I'm saying in the last minute is that you can believe the truth of what the Bible and other tomes tells us. And you can also believe that the government will use it as a psyop. As a matter of fact, it should edify your beliefs. It should make them stronger. The fact that we know what's going to happen at the end of this book. We know that we win. We know that these people will use whatever. And as a matter of fact, the book tells us, all of the books tells us they're going to use these truths against us. You know, now can we build our non-hostile army together, you know, for truth, looking at truth and also realizing that the government will try to use these truths against us. Can we come together on that consensus? With that, we've got about 10 seconds left. I love you all. Please share this if you can, and we will see you next week. Bye.
I love you too, honey. Discernment is the key right now.
Absolutely.